Tonight, the editor-in-chief of the AV Club, John Tatey, has some trivia for us. Then later, we host a pretty late rap party for the cast of The Grapes of Wrath. But first, we check in with our new friends at Eataly. All that, plus a visit from Adam Selzer right now on Pretty Late with Patty Vasquez.
It is so good to be back. Hello. I've been off since last Wednesday. I was here Wednesday night. Do you say you're off since last Wednesday, or I've been off since Thursday? Let's go back. Let's roll back the tape and fix that.
Okay. Yeah.
I left town on Thursday. How are you doing, John Tatey?
I'm great. It's a beautiful night out
here. I know. I feel bad for dragging you in off the streets of Chicago. It's almost a full moon. It's a light breeze.
And swimming and gymnastics are over, so I do not have to listen to those particular NBC announcers anymore.
Oh, were those your events? Or you didn't like those events?
Those are my... I like the events, although there's way too much swimming on.
You realize it's Summer Olympics. So they do summery type things. Like gymnastics, I don't get why you can't do that any time of the year. How is that not a winter Olympic sport? Seriously.
It's all indoors.
They're all inside. It's air conditioned. You can
do that
any time of year.
I never thought about that.
I'm sorry. Is it because they're wearing leotards? It seems a little...
I think it's just because winter stuff is stuff you would only do in winter, right?
I guess.
Skiing, sledding, snowboarding, skating.
Good point. Ice skating you can do anytime too, by the way, although it's indoors. It's because it's indoors.
No, I like the events very much, but the announcers are just... NBC has been using the same crews for so long, and Rowdy Gaines, the color guy on swimming, shouts for every race, and you don't need to shout.
No.
Microphone technology has advanced to the point that you do not need to yell at us, to the point of incomprehensibility.
And that's true of not just sports announcers, but also anyone giving a speech, including our politicians now, who don't trust the ability of technology to pick up their voices. Yes, the yelling is weird. I have to agree.
These people have been in front of microphones all their lives, practically.
I know. You don't have to yell. Because then you're just yelling, and then it's being amplified. Imagine that. I know. I'm not watching that much of the Olympics, actually.
Oh, no?
I haven't seen very much, so don't tell me how it ends.
No spoilers?
There are people who, Esmerald, have you seen the WGN Facebook page? There are people who are like, you need to give me a warning when you're going to, it's a sports segment, you know? Kevin Powell's going to say something.
Yeah, but aren't they're doing it wrong anyway in the NBC realm? Because they're showing stuff, but then they tell you beforehand already.
They are doing that.
So they're the ones spoiling it,
I've
not us.
As well.
What? Sometimes they do that for the sports they don't really care about, like the the long jump coverage the other night. They were doing that, tipping their hand before they showed the previous footage.
And handball. We were watching something. We were like, what is this? It was a weird shaped ball. It didn't look like it was like a handball. It looked like a deflated rugby ball.
Handball is a cool sport.
Okay.
Handball looks like a tiny, that thing looks like a tiny soccer ball.
Yes, it does.
That's a sport that's huge in Europe, and over here, nobody cares about it.
No. Is it huge in Latin America?
No, not as. It's really Europe is where all the power teams come from in handball.
It was hard to watch women boxing yesterday because it was the United States against Russia.
Oh, wow.
I know.
Who won? I didn't see that.
Russia.
You know, I was watching they have an app, the NBC Olympics app on certain devices. I was watching it on my Xbox, and you can just pick an event to watch.
Really?
And I watched women's hammer throw, because I always find the hammer throw very beautiful, the way that they spin around so fast and then hurl this thing. And I saw a Polish woman set the world record for the hammer throw.
That's exciting.
That was exciting. And no commentators on the app for the more obscure events.
Oh, you just watch it. While it's happening.
You just watch it, and it's like you're at the track meet. It's cool.
Well, there have been some articles about how, as you mentioned, stuck in the past, the NBC coverage is.
Yes.
And didn't like the head of NBC say, well, it's mostly women watching, so let's treat it like a reality show, which is annoying and ignorant, I think, because women enjoy sports. There are a lot of if it's 55%.
I couldn't agree more. And I'm glad you brought that up, because the broadcast, the production is so condescending to women, and everybody has a mom who sacrificed so much for them.
Yes.
And it's so treacly and tiresome. And they have these thank you mom spots. Like, the mom stuff is over the top. And I get it. They're marketing to suburban moms who disproportionately watch the Olympics, especially compared to other sporting events. I get the sort of cynical marketing thinking behind it. And they've spent a lot of money on this, etc. But it's just painful to watch. And it's so one note.
Right. Well, and they wouldn't interview, like, during, let's say if during a football game, right? They have, like, they have some interviews, they cut away to other things, other stats, other information, but it's never the sort of sappy, you know, the doldrums, the sad stuff. It's just, it's not that, is it? Maybe I'm wrong about the football games.
I mean,
in baseball games, they definitely don't do it.
Sure, there'll be a touch of that sometimes in the pregame show, but there's different approaches. And look, I'm not here to sing the praises of American football coverage. I critique it quite regularly
in my
column on the AV Club.
Which is called what?
Block and Tackle.
Block and Tackle.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. But the reason I brought up the announcing is that I think these guys are doing a disservice to their sports. I think that the swimming guys, especially Rowdy Gaines, the color commentator.
You're not going to let Rowdy Gaines off the hook, are you?
I'm not going to let Rowdy off the hook.
I think
it does a disservice by screaming about every race, because a sport really thrives in the hearts and minds of the viewers when it makes the excitement come alive within them and that they're not yelled at. I think the same thing for gymnastics. Everything is about a 4-year journey and dreams are about to come true. You know what? Let the moment hang in the air. Mm-hmm. Let it take its grasp on us. Al Trautwig, who's been doing gymnastics on NBC since time immemorial, just pours it on so thick for every competitor. Everybody is having their dreams come true, and their mothers must be watching. And oh, if somebody has a dead mother, oh, that's even better.
Yeah, and they're not cutting away to the grave or anything, are they? It'd be so weird. That'd be so maudlin, wouldn't it? To get to a whole new level, you may as well have like a cam set up. That's creepy. I got creepy there. You don't have to do with that information, do you?
No, I don't. I don't know.
And you shouldn't do anything with it at all.
No, I'm not going to touch it.
I know some people are really. Esmeralda, are you watching a lot of the Olympics?
I'm watching it on silent. Most of the time.
Oh,
because I'm somewhere and it's just on.
It's on everywhere you go.
Right.
Yeah.
That's true. It is just in the air right now.
Yeah. And, well, if you go, we went to a bar. I was in Philadelphia. We went to a place called City Tap, which was great, by the way. Long story. But they had a lot of different screens on. That's where I saw handball and boxing. And it was almost like sensory overload, because I don't know how many channels are running different events at once.
Oh, yeah. They got the multicast going.
My brain couldn't process. It was very.
Yeah, I watched two versions of volleyball.
There's
beach and then there's regular
court,
which I'm confused by why there's
two. Well, beach volleyball is only 2-on-2.
That's right.
Mm-hmm.
That's right.
And that's so hard. It's so hard when you're just digging in the sand and it just your
it
ability
looks
to move.
Hard.
Yeah.
Beach volleyball is fun to watch.
It is. Did you like either one of the volleyballs? All right then.
Really?
Yeah, I'm not too. It's fine. Whatever.
What is your favorite?
I like the. I was watching the track and field.
Oh, yes.
I forget what they were running, but they're running in packs. And I always wonder, like, how does the one, like, if you're in the middle, how do you get out? Because I just feel like someone's going to trip over someone, and then it's just going to be a domino effect. And
how do you decide to make your move?
Yeah, I mean, well, speaking of the tripping, the gold medalist in the men's 5,000 meters fell in the middle of the race and got up and won the race.
There you go.
I mean, it's a long race, so he had plenty of time. 5,000 meters.
Maybe he was taking a break. He didn't even fall at all. He's like, if I could just.
There was that one who.
Take a breath here.
Dove.
Yeah, to cross the finish line. I guess if your torso is what I'd heard. If your torso crosses the finish line, that's the part. Like, not just your arm.
That's right.
But if you, I guess, flinging. It's like sliding, I guess.
That's
sliding across.
It is. It's like
head
in
first.
Baseball.
Yeah.
I mean,
head
you're not
first
supposed
slide.
To do that. Yeah, there
I would
was
imagine.
Some controversy over there, but it was all perfectly legitimate. Even
yeah,
if,
you
even
can't
if
combine sports.
On.
You're not supposed to do diving as part of the element. And speaking of diving, by the way, the pool. Let's not even get into the pool situation.
Oh, the green pool?
The fart pool. I don't understand what's happening. That's what they're calling. They said it smells. It's so odoriferous. You know, that's a weird place for me to break, because I apologize to our guest that's coming up after this break. So let's cleanse our palate. We have the chef, the cheese and meat technologist at Eataly, David Malzahn.
The cheese and meat technologist?
Technologist, yes.
This is going to be a good one.
This is amazing. We have a tray next to us that I have not let you touch because it's for our guests coming up in just a little bit.
Taunting me. I'm not worthy of these meats and cheeses.
Oh my God, do you see the olives? Those are like, those are the kinds you see, you know, in a case where you're like, those are the ones you don't get to eat.
What kind?
What kind of olives? They're big, bright, and green. There's all the olives.
Ooh.
There's a lot of olives. I almost feel bad for our listeners.
Is there any blue cheese stuff?
There's definitely. Well, you know what? Let's find out from David what he sent over here.
Yeah.
When we come back after this, everyone wants to know on 720 WGN. You are listening prettily. I'm your host, Patty Vasquez, live in the Allstate Showcase studio, joined by the editor-in-chief of the AV Club, John Tatey. And we have a cast party. We have a rap party coming up tonight after midnight. And you're welcome to stay, by the way.
Rap party for what?
For the Grapes of Wrath. The Grapes of Wrath? Wrath. The Grapes of Wrath. I'm,
the
you know
Grapes
what, you
of
know
Raffy, the popular children's
Well, I'm so distracted by this food over here, I can't speak clearly. We have a tray of delicious treats from Eataly, and joining us on the line is the cheese and meat technologist, David Malzahn. Am I saying your name correctly, David?
Yeah, you are, absolutely.
Well, this is exciting. You have brought over a tasty tray, and I was trying to tell people, you know, Esmeralda in particular, who was asking about, what kind of cheese were you asking, Esmeralda?
No, what kind of olives?
Oh, what kind of olives are on this,
and
David?
And cheese.
Well, yeah, olives and cheese. Well, let's see here. The olives are an easy one to answer. That's one of our house marinated olives. So basically you have a combination of all the olives that we have. The big green ones, I did hear you mentioning those.
Yes.
They're very delicious. Those are called cerinola, and they're from Puglia, which would be the heel of the boot if you want to think about it geographically. So those are those. The smaller green ones, those guys are from Sicily. Those are called Testa Veltronio. And then, of course, inside of there, you have those little darker ones, too, like Tajasca, some really great stuff.
Can you tell me a little bit about how the geography affects the type of olive that we are going to enjoy later?
Good question.
Well, definitely. I mean, it's just like anything that grows, the terroir, if you will, that it grows in definitely has an impact on what you are going to taste. You think about the olives from Sicily, the Testa Veltronos there, they're grown in a highly volcanic soil. So at that point, they impart a great, great kind of depth of flavor to it. As opposed to the Puglian olive, the cerinola right there, it's more grown on the plains, so a little bit more of a milder, almost a meaty taste to it.
Olives, who knew?
I know. It's
who
so
knew
hard.
There was so much to know about it, right?
It's so hard for me to not dig in, but this is really for our cast coming up from the Gift Theater, and I want to thank you so much.
You're not allowed to touch it?
No, I'm not. Well, I'm
no,
not, and I'm
it's
not,
all taped up, David.
Yes, and I'm not letting anyone else touch it either. Because it's for,
but you're going to touch it after you open it, right?
Oh, well, I mean, like, I might just stick my face in it, but that would be touching, I guess.
Okay, I got you.
So, and there's some lovely meats also spread out on this tray in between rows of cheese. Do you know what?
Teach us about meat now.
Yes.
This is fun.
Yeah, the meat there that you're seeing in front of you is prosciutto di Parma. So this is a salt-cured ham from Parma, which is in the northern section of Italy. So we're going higher up the boot if we follow up the back of the boot line, you go all the way up there. And right before you get to the top of it, you're going to meet Emilia-Romagna, where it is the city of Parma, where this prosciutto hails from.
Oh, it looks really good. And the cheese, now, is it a type of mozzarella cheese, or am
it is. Yes, it is. It's mozzarella that we make in-house every day, which is really cool because, you know, there are not many restaurants, if any restaurants in Chicago, or for that matter in the Midwest, that is making mozzarella fresh daily, every day. And the mozzarella that we make today, if we don't sell it, we just don't use it at that point. We repurpose it for other things inside the shop. Kind of it goes to the bakery and we cook with it at that point. So that mozzarella that these guys from the cast party, the wrap party, what they'll be eating has been made probably within the past hour or two. So.
Wow.
Now,
David, you are the cheese and meat technologist. Justify that title.
Okay, well, you saw, now, Screener was saying, you know, what's my title over at Eataly? My title is SAFO Manager, which really doesn't mean much of anything. So I figured, you know, I'll make something up on the fly. And
okay.
Meat and cheese technologist sounds good.
Yeah,
otherwise,
it does.
Well, thank you. I appreciate
I like that.
I worked on that.
But SAFO Manager sounds even better.
Yeah, because then I'm like, what? SAFO, what?
Yeah, what SAFO's is sapphic about
word,
your day?
Which actually stands for SAFO. Salumi and formaggi. So salumi is the meat, like the prosciutto. Formaggi, the cheese, like the mozzarella that you have on the platter there with you.
Oh, delightful. And I see that some of the meat is wrapped around some cantaloupe. Is there?
Yes.
Tell us a little bit about what that combination does when you taste it.
Well, that's the perfect matching of a little bit of fat, salt, and sweet right there. So think about it in that way. It's a classic Italian pairing that you're going to find. Speaking of pairings, all week long at Eataly, we're featuring perfect prosciutto pairings, like prosciutto and melon, like prosciutto and mozzarella, like prosciutto and the olives that you have there. So if you get the opportunity, if you can't have what's on side of on that tray right now, I encourage you to come on, stop on by this week and try some of those perfect pairings that we have to offer all week long.
And for anyone who isn't familiar with Eataly, it's right over here at 43 East Ohio Street. And,
correct.
And it has become a dining destination. And it's wonderful when you mention the word Eataly, people's faces just light up. They're like, oh,
they do.
Every time I walk by, there's tourists streaming in and out of that place. It seems to be quite a hot spot.
For anyone who's not familiar, tell us a little bit about how it's organized. What is it like when you walk into Eataly?
Well, the great thing about it is that it's really an emporium of Italian food. As soon as you walk in, you know you've kind of walked into something different at that point, so something really unique. The hardest thing for people to realize is that not only are we a restaurant, not only are we a place that encourages people, you go pick up your friends from out of town, the first thing you want to do is show them Eataly, but it's also something that people within the Chicagoland area and in the burbs can come in and shop also, along with dining. It's a restaurant and a market. Sometimes people scratch their head and say, well, what's that all about? You can come on up to that Sappho counter, that salumi and formaggi counter, and you can pick up cheeses from around Eataly, and also Italy, and you can also pick up cheeses that are featured right here in the Midwest. Like in Italian, what we do is we find cheeses and things that are the best quality that they are. We find them that are the closest to us, and we bring them in and share them with our guests. So,
and David, where are you from originally?
I'm from Cicero, actually.
Hey, from Cicero. Now, where did you get your experience, your education in everything that is Eataly now?
Well, I've been with Eataly now for 3 years. Prior to that, I worked in a small Italian market in the South Loop, and actually a career changer in 2006, and went to Kendall College and graduated from there.
Oh, see, and that's the thing. Kendall College is such a great, destination. Another place where people really learn how to become culinary experts. Huh. And what were you doing? What was the career change, if I might ask?
I was actually working in radio.
He couldn't wait to get out of that business.
That's fantastic.
Yeah, well, I guess you guys, we are kindred spirits,
Yeah, no, well, now I'm like, because I had asked our producer, Craig Collins, to try to find somebody that would provide a tray. So thank you so much for being the ones that volunteered. And I want to invite everybody to go to Eataly. This week they're doing their perfect prosciutto pairings. What would be something, you mentioned cheese. Is that also as far as wines and beers and things like that?
Yeah, absolutely. For example, a great beer that we're brewing in-house right now is called Ragazza. Okay, it's a house-made beer, and this is a California common beer, which, if you're familiar with the Anchor Steam products, the Anchor Steam
Oh, yes.
beers,
mm-hmm.
that's great beer, okay, and it goes great with prosciutto because it's a little lower volume alcohol content. The bitterness of it is fairly low at that point, and it's a pretty special beer because it's brewed during the summertime, or traditionally brewed in the summertime, with a yeast that activates at a little bit warmer temperature at that point. So it gives it that milder, rich taste to it that goes really, really well with prosciutto di Parma.
David, I wish I could have you along for every meal because I just love hearing you talk about these. This tray seems even 10 times more tempting now that you've described everything, and yet Patty will still not let me touch it.
You can touch it at midnight after our guests come. God, that sounded a little naughty.
You guys can come in at any time you want to. Be happy to take you around. Next week, though, we're talking about prosciutto an awful lot here. And next week, these next two weeks are going to be crazy with prosciutto over at Eataly. Next week, we're featuring exclusively prosciutto di Parma and doing specials with that group in the restaurants and within the market itself. In fact, if you come on by, the catch here is that you got that melon, you got that mozzarella there that you see in front of you. If you come on by and buy a tray of prosciutto di Parma, which is typically about a quarter pound or maybe a little bit more, you buy one tray, you get a melon for free, so you get to take it home and try it for yourself. Mm. Or you buy two trays and you get mozzarella for free.
Oh, I think I know where my next destination is.
Yeah.
I went all the way to Philly, and I can stay home and go to Eataly.
It's
like leaving the city and coming right back again. Just walk out the doors.
Well, it's kind of like taking to go for a picnic.
Exactly.
You think about the weather right now.
Oh, no kidding. It's perfect weather. Well, David, we look forward to meeting you in person sometime. If you ever have a chance to stay up late and come in studio, I'd love to hang out with you.
Yeah, absolutely. I would be happy to do that.
Wonderful. Again, this is David Malzahn, who is the cheese and meat technologist at Eataly. And you can go to eataly.com or visit them in person at 43 East Ohio Street. Thank you again for feeding our cast from Grapes of Wrath at the Gift
Theater.
It's my
pleasure.
Thank you so much. Ciao, ciao. Bye. You are listening pretty late. I'm your host, Patty Vasquez, live in the Allstate Showcase Studio. Joining me is the editor-in-chief of the AV Club, John Tatey. I finally got it right. Just want you to know that, by the way. I think I'm finally getting
my title.
Your title.
Yes. Great timing, Pat.
I know. Senior editor, chief editor. I don't know, something, something. You were an editor before. Weren't you an editor when I first met you? Like,
I was always senior editor.
You were always senior editor.
I met you, yeah.
Yeah, you had a live show at Second City when we met. Producer Dan Long brought you in.
Good memory.
Yes, of course I remember the first night we met. It was very exciting.
I remember that too.
I wouldn't let you leave. You had like you were trying. I was holding onto your shirt and holding. I was grabbing onto your ankles. Don't go.
You were so nice. And when I came in here, I was just like, I can't believe I'm going to be on the radio and WGN. I was just like, totally like struck by it. And then when you asked me back, I was like, oh man, like I can't believe this. I still, it's still a thrill for me. I love being on the radio.
Well, you always have so many great things to tell us about audiovisual things. Everything on AV Club is it's music, it's gaming, mm-hmm. television, movies, comedy, so many great things going on at the AV Club. And I know one of your things though, one of your jam, I guess.
Yes.
Expertise is in a lot of different areas, but you do love you some game shows.
I have a wide-ranging expertise. I will say that as a preface, but my wheelhouse is game shows. Mm-hmm. So I was delighted to see that ABC has renewed its primetime game show lineup, which we've talked about briefly here on the show, but it's Celebrity Family Feud, mm-hmm. which I find too penis-y. I can say that, right?
Is it too
early to say that?
No.
If
they're doing it on ABC, is ABC?
It's ABC, and I don't know. Every question seems to be somehow about men's genitalia.
Why is it never vagina-y? It's always penis-y?
Exactly.
What is that?
I agree.
I'm just asking.
But it's a family feud that you can't really watch with your family, mm-hmm. Which is strange to me. And it's the first one in that Sunday night lineup they have. It's on at, I guess here it's on at 7.
Okay. And that's Sunday nights?
Sunday night at 7.
And well, I guess if you figure you're done with church and your family dinner, you get right to it.
But then they have Pyramid, which is very clean and very mm-hmm. family friendly, hosted by Michael Strahan. Excellent remake. They've screwed up Pyramid a couple times since Dick Clark stopped doing it. But they got this right. And then Match Game with Alec Baldwin, which I love.
Is he signed on to do the rest of the season?
Oh, yeah.
Really?
Yeah, so he's gonna be back. I think I asked ABC to give me a timeline because I did write it up on the site, and they wouldn't tell me when the shows are coming back. I would imagine next summer they're going to be back.
Don't they know who you are? Like, you asked for a timeline. Did they even get, we'll get back to you? Not even a, no acknowledgement of your notice at all?
You know, the head of Unscripted at ABC did send me a very nice note about my Match Game review, which, you know, they don't have to do that, and they usually don't. So it was nice of him to reach out. And they also renewed the To Tell the Truth remake, which runs on Tuesdays and is quite terrible.
Oh, no. Yeah. Have you written the review of that?
I have not.
Because you don't want to get the nasty note from them?
Yeah.
You're like, you know what? No. I'm going to stick with, I got a nice note from them.
Yeah. No, I have no such fear, but I just, it's not interesting enough
not even
to talk
worth,
about.
Oh, interesting.
No.
Well, not interesting.
Not interesting.
Not interesting.
That's right.
Does this mean that there will be more game shows coming on other channels, other primetime network?
I would love to see a resurgence of the primetime game show. You know, it kind of happened with Millionaire in 2000. That's when that craze peaked. But the problem with that was, A, all the other game shows that came on were Millionaire clones.
Right.
They sort of looked and acted like Millionaire. And ABC drove Millionaire into the ground, at one point scheduling it 4 nights a week, which is just too much.
No, it was an oversaturation.
It became the Millionaire Network.
Yeah, people started getting queasy when they, well, is this on again? Is this the same day?
Yeah.
I mean, really?
I mean, it was dizzying because it was on so often. They're doing it right this time with a lineup of mm-hmm. different shows. Imagine that.
Right.
And I think Pyramid and Match Game are the ones to watch, though.
And are there any other shows that you would love to see come back? Not just game shows coming back, but since they've relaunched them, I guess, is the best way.
I got two shows that I would love to see again. One of them is Sale of the Century, which was redone, I want to say, about 5 or 6 years ago as Temptation, which is also what it's called overseas in a number of markets. That was sort of a slow build quiz show.
Okay.
And at the, you'd rack up a, you know, maybe $80 in winnings during the main game. And then the gimmick was at the end of the game, you could use that $80 to buy, I don't know, like a trip to the Barbados for $80, or you could come back and try to win again. And then if you built up a little more money, you could buy jewelry or a car or the whole works, everything on the stage. So it was this long buildup over time. It was exciting to watch.
And you kept coming, people could come back like week
if
after week.
People were good players. They could keep coming back. But, and this is the reason it was all, often called temptation in many markets. If you lost, that was it. You didn't get another shot to spend your money.
Whatever you earned.
Yeah. And there would be opportunities to buy merchandise during the game, too. So you could, might sacrifice your lead against another player to buy a little goodie for yourself. you would be tempted. I'd love to see that done right again.
And who hosted that?
That was hosted by Jim Perry in the United States.
Okay.
Yeah. Who also hosted Card Sharks. He was a great classic host. I'd like to see this somewhat obscure show called Whew, Come Back.
I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Well, that seems problematic when it comes to putting that in the TV guide. If I'm scrolling through, I don't even know. I see, is it symbols? Is it a...
Well, it was spelled W-H-E-W, exclamation point, but it was pronounced whew. Even the announcer would say...
Esmeralda, how do you spell whew?
Is there a P-H-E-W?
See, I do it with a P-H.
E-W?
Yeah, I do it with a P-H.
W?
Sure. Phew.
W?
Okay. W.
That's totally acceptable. Phew. But this is how they spelled it.
Okay, sorry, go ahead.
This was—it's kind of a complex game where it was a very, very fast-paced trivia game. One player would set up blocks on the board. Mm-hmm. You know, it was sort of a Jeopardy-style board with different dollar amounts assigned to the questions. And then the other contestant would come in, they'd been off stage, and they would try to go up the board and avoid the hidden blocks, the blocks that the other player had hidden there. There were traps basically laid on the board.
And they have no way of knowing where the traps are.
They have no way of knowing. So they sort of have to strategize because the lower dollar amount questions are easier. So the blocker is trying to figure out whether the other player is going to go for it or whether they're going to try to play it safe. I think it didn't last too long. I forget if it was one or two seasons. I think it didn't last too long because it was a little complicated. But boy, it was fun to watch.
Well, and when they hit the block, when they hit the booby trap,
they would lose 5 seconds of clock. So they had like,
and so they had to remember where those are then again to work around them or no?
It would flip. It was little blocks. And they
so
would
then you would
flip
know.
Over
okay.
and show you, and then you would pick a different question.
I'm combining like board games. Remember the game like memory.
Yes.
I mean, like, wouldn't it be fun if it was like, remember Concentration, where you push down the board and you have to fit in the pieces, and if you didn't do it in time, it all popped up and you never.
That's not Concentration.
What though. Is it?
What is that one called?
312-981-7700.
Tell us what that game is called. Concentration is just flipping.
Not Concentration.
Perfection.
Perfection.
Perfection. Good.
Ah, Esmeralda.
Well done, Esmeralda.
Perfection. That, did you ever, were you ever, I would hold the board down. My
hand is
keep going.
Yeah.
It's not cheating. If you're just playing by yourself, it's not cheating.
Well, it's still
cheating.
Which
is true so many ways.
Nobody has to know.
It all works out very well. You just
That's good advice for life in general.
Fit the peg in the right spot. More after this on 720 WGN. You're listening Pretty Late. I'm your host, Patty Vasquez, live in the Allstate Showcase studio. By request, that's the Queen's Time of the Down. Requested by the editor-in-chief of the AV Club, John Tatey. We're in our last segment with you. Are you hanging around for the Gift Theater's wrap party for the Grapes of Wrath? They're having some of the food from Italy, and I provided some beverages.
They're having a good time there in the green room.
I'm so glad.
I am going to depart at midnight.
All right, then.
But during the break, Esmeralda was telling us about this pole vaulter who... Esmeralda, you got to tell the story, because I don't know.
And it actually will relate to a question that we have from a listener, because she wants to ask about the Family Feud, so I think it works out really well.
His bottom half... ran into the pole. His pole hit the pole. If we could save it.
Well done, my friend. Well done. How did your pole vaulting go? Well, I vaulted with my pole. It was all bad.
It was not good.
Is he okay? Did he have to go to the emergency room? Or?
Oh, that I don't know. No. I keep laughing at the fact. Because there's just slow-mo pictures where you just see it like brunk.
The agony of defeat. Well, of something else. Mary had a question about Family Feud. We were mentioning earlier that it's a little bit it's a little risque now on Sunday nights with Steve. Is it Steve Harvey?
Steve Harvey, yeah.
Steve Harvey. Mary?
Good.
Yeah.
Don't want to knock Steve Harvey.
I do.
Go ahead,
but go ahead, Mary.
Yeah, the nighttime is a little more risque. I was just wondering, if a person was wanting to be one of the 100 people surveyed, how can they be one of the 100?
Ooh, 100 people surveyed. How do they actually? I've never thought about that. Who are these people that are being surveyed?
I don't know. I know that in the past they have used studio audiences.
They've been making it up.
No, they don't make it up.
No.
No, it is legitimate, but I think that they often use studio audiences.
Are you sure it's not the same 100 people over and over and over again for the last 35 years?
Well, I think they give those 100 people a huge sheet of questions to answer.
Oh,
yeah.
Wow. And just run it through a machine. There you go, Mary. Yeah. Did you want to be one of the 100?
Yeah, but I can't really be in a studio audience.
Yeah, aww. No, me neither. Yeah. Well, it's just one of those things.
Well, Mary, you were the one on this hour of yes. WGN, which I think is better than being one of an anonymous 100.
I agree.
Okay.
All right.
Thank you,
Mary.
Thank you.
Have a good night. Of course. Yeah, I've never been in an audience of a game show. I've been in an I was at Oprah's taping like four or five. I never got anything there. Never got a car or.
Hey, if I can go back to the Olympics for a second, my grandfather was a pole vaulter.
That's so cool. A pole vaulter, even.
Yes, he was. That's why this story brought that to mind. He never had this experience. But
you don't know. That's not something he's going to tell his grandson. that he racked himself with the pole.
Well, here's what he did tell me. He was the favorite going into the event.
Okay. What year was he competing?
1948. So this was the first Olympics after the war. He was the favorite to win the gold. And he always told me it started to rain during the event, so he couldn't get as good a grip with his pole in the pit, right? Mm-hmm. And I believed him, but I always thought, I wonder how true it is, because my grandfather was also very competitive, as you might imagine.
Right.
Part of the story is that after he lost out on meddling, he went around the world and did these impromptu one-on-one pole vault matches against all the people who beat him to prove that he was actually the best in the world.
I love that.
But over the weekend, I was in New Hampshire, where I'm from, so visiting my family, and my brother came up to see the baby and all that, and he showed us this film he found on YouTube of the 48 games.
Okay.
I think if you want to search for it, although I don't know why you would, but it's just like complete film of 1948 Olympic games. I think it'll come up. And it showed the pole vault competition, and it showed the rain falling right before my grandfather went up. And the announcer said, and the American favorite, Boo Morcombe was his name.
Boo Morcombe. Okay. Sure.
And the American favorite comes up, and then it showed him, not making the vault because of the rain. And it was such a moment for me because I was like, it's true. This really is how it happened. He wasn't just sort of making excuses after the fact.
Right.
It was this sudden downpour in the middle of the meet that threw him off, which is heartbreaking, for him that he lost out on a medal, but also I'm just so glad to know that really is how it happened.
Did you feel a little bit bad for doubting him?
Yes, of course I did.
Oh, I'm so sorry.
I felt terrible, especially, he's dead now.
No, but I think you get to have that. Oh, there's Grandpa again. He didn't win the gold.
Yeah, I mean, I want to emphasize that I did believe him, but I wasn't 100%
right.
How much had it been embellished, and it was totally true.
What a great thing, though. To be able to see your grandfather compete in the Olympics.
Yeah.
And where was it again? It was
London.
In London. Ugh, they were not cleaning. They were not waiting. There's no rain delay on the pole vault.
No. No.
You would think.
And they fell into this pile of sawdust.
Oh, no.
There was no foam pans or anything.
Right.
It looked rough.
It's got a little state of the art. They're a little wackadoo when it comes to. I mean, I think that the Olympics should go back to like that, right? If it rains, tough. You vault. You do the stuff.
Yeah.
There's nothing. There's none of this high end tech.
They should go back to doing it naked like the Greeks.
Okay. Well, then that's a little too far.
Speaking of Family Feud,
how would that pole vaulting look? That would be terrible. That's not. You got to holster that. Look, this guy. This guy's spinning around on the single bar. You want him naked?
Oh, we're watching the high bar competition.
The high
right
bar.
Now, yeah.
The men's gymnastics.
He actually just bit it real hard.
Oh, did he?
Oh no. Well, we're catching the part where he's about to dismount. I'm getting the sense that he's got a lot of momentum going.
Well, Patty, in true Olympic fashion, he got back up on the high bar and completed the routine. Of course, he won't medal in this particular event, but it is the Olympic spirit shining through once again.
And how brave of him to compete without any makeup on.
That's
I think
fantastic.
That really good shows. Yeah, good for him for not feeling like he has to fit in the norms of men's gymnastics.
Rob, did you watch the men's team all-around competition?
I caught a little bit of it.
Just excruciating. Yeah. I mean, I bring it up because one of the Americans, I forget his name right now, Denell something, I think, fell off the high bar, and it looked quite traumatic. But, boy, that was such a contrast to the women who dominated. The men just couldn't stop tripping over themselves.
But that guy you're referring to, I think, did well on the parallel bars,
okay,
if I'm not mistaken. I forget his last name. I've got to look it up, but
That is correct. Okay. Yeah, he did. He did.
So they have a little spotter, not a little spotter, but they have a spotter to get them on the high bar. Are there any events for the women where they have to have like someone like lift them onto the equipment?
The uneven bars.
The uneven bars?
Yeah.
They have someone, I always thought that they just hopped up there. Does it depend on what your moves are going to be?
No.
How you want to start? They all get a little bit of lift.
You always start on the high bar on the uneven bars.
I always feel uncomfortable because on the uneven bars for the women, you always get the coach sometimes comes in about midway through the routine just to make sure she catches the bar.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, yeah, that's sort of like that sort of stutter stuff.
Yeah, right. And you see him come in there, you're like, wait, dude, he's supposed to be there.
I'm so glad because it always makes me nervous, too, when they step in there. I mean, obviously, they know what they're doing. But although I saw a couple gymnasts fall and the coach didn't catch them, so I don't really know what he's there for.
You know what? I love gymnastics. I like diving. My problem with these sports is that you've got such tremendous athletes and they're being judged.
Yeah.
It's all subjective.
Right. Well, unless they fall. Mm. That's an easy thing.
I mean, you do a face plant. That's several tenths.
Yeah.
I mean, the deductions, I mean, you can see a routine that just seems perfect,
yes.
And then they're like a point and a half of deductions.
Yeah, the stuff that we don't see. You know.
I guess not, but I don't know what they're deducting. Mm-hmm. I wish there were a list.
Oh, right. You need a checklist of what the judges are looking at?
I wish it would come up on the screen and tell us, hey, here's what we deducted for.
Would you be then, you know, watching it more carefully and then, you know, rewinding it, watching it in slow-mo? Oh, I see what they did there. I see why they
took
all the
points. Well, wouldn't you like to know? I mean, it's such an opaque sport, which is what Rob's getting at, and it's a little frustrating.
Right. I mean, the time sports, obviously, a race is a race, right?
Exactly.
And I've been trying to tell my son who, you know, I was a swimmer, and the thing that I always try to remember as a swimmer was you're always swimming against yourself. You're always swimming against your fastest time. There's a great, have you seen the meme of Michael Phelps and the when he was doing the butterfly and the guy in the lane next to him, like looking at him? And it's,
oh, really?
It's like winners are always looking to win and losers are looking at winners. Like, it's kind of a great, yeah. And Phelps, the other thing is that's just so, do you think he's coming back? Because I think he's going to come back.
Think he's done.
No, I think he's coming back.
And I'm tired of looking at his face, frankly.
He's got an interesting smile.
It's fine. He's
fine. He's fine looking. I'm not knocking his appearance. I'm just tired of, like, NBC at times had the camera on him for minutes at a time in a little box as he's just sitting there in the waiting room. And I'm thinking, we don't need to see this.
Well, and then
there's plenty of athletes.
You get that hoodie picture of him where he looks almost demonic that everyone's been.
Always with the hoodie. Yeah. NBC's cameras were drawn to it like moths to the flame.
Well, speaking of the scrutiny, Gabby Douglas has been dealing a lot of, you know, even in press conferences, the question of why she didn't put her hand on her heart. And, you know, there's the idea that makes her unpatriotic. And there are, you know, everyone will post things. This is the requirement. There's no requirement.
No.
She was standing. She was doing whatever. I mean, most people stand and try to sing the national anthem or stand in honor of it.
She had a very un-Gabby Douglas-like performance at these Olympics.
Yeah.
So I don't think she was feeling real good about herself. In fact, she said as much.
Right.
After, you know, all of these questions were raised, why didn't you put your hand on your heart? So I don't classify her as unpatriotic, although I think maybe she should have known better.
Well, now how much pressure for everybody else? My hand.
Yeah, right.
Wouldn't you be very dramatic about it?
Nobody's going to miss that.
Just walk around with your hand on your heart. Look at me. Yes.
I think when you've won a gold medal for the United States, you don't get to accuse that person of being unpatriotic. They won a gold medal for our country.
Good point.
There you go.
Well, I haven't done that. Have you?
No. I've never. No. I don't know.
I tried, but I failed miserably.
What event?
Beer pong.
Well, there you go.
Is that not an event?
Yeah. I would salute you I'll salute you when you win beer pong next time. I promise. Well, we look forward to having you back next week.
Okay.
If you notice, by the way, we don't talk about the election. I only talk about the election on Wednesdays and Thursdays, by the way. We have new segments called Trump Trackers, as named by Esmeralda Leon.
Trump Trackers.
Yes. All the latest.
I love talking about the election. We're not going to talk about it on Tuesdays anymore.
You have to come on a Wednesday or a Thursday. We can talk about Down the Ticket. We should start talking about Down the Ticket, the rest of the ticket.
Okay.
All the rest of the races.
Okay.
Yeah.
The
down ballot. Because it could be really interesting depending on who's going to win this election. But those are really what people need to start paying attention to as well. But
I think people are because they're so, especially, you know, Republicans are so tired of Trump that they're, you know, there was that open letter today to the leadership. Am I going to run over?
I have to go to the news.
Okay.
Go home. I have a rap party to throw. Actually, they've had the rap party. They're going to interview the cast of Grapes of Wrath from the Gift Theater, and their successful run. Wildly successful. I tried getting tickets. All sold out. Every single show that I tried to go to. But John Tatey, you can follow him on Twitter at John Tatey and go read everything that is fantastic by John Tatey and all the rest of the writers at theavclub.com.
Just avclub.com, I should
at the,
say.
Just AV Club.
At the AV, at the Club, AV Club, which you can find at avclub.com.
Exactly. Those things that he said. Thank you, John.
Thanks, Patty.
You are listening Pretty Late. I'm your host, Patty Vasquez, live in the Allstate Showcase studio. When Craig Collins and I started working together a couple years ago, I had this idea that, I mean, we want to promote theater, but I thought it would be fun to have wrap parties and have the actors, the directors, whoever wanted to come in and join us and let us know how the run went. I thought it'd be kind of fun to give you an opportunity to share that side of it. And, you know, George Carlos from the Gale Street Inn has been such a big champion of the Gift Theater, which is in the neighborhood where I grew up in Jefferson Park. And he said, like, would you please have Michael Patrick Thornton on? And I was like, oh my God, enough with this guy. And we are thrilled to have you in studio. Thank you so much, Mike. Can I call you, just call you Michael? Do I have to say MPT?
No, you can do the full name.
Michael Patrick Thornton?
No, you can call me Mike.
I'll say it really fast and yeah, people will be very angry at me.
Yes, no, thank you for having me, and thanks, George, for advocating as always so beautifully for the Gift.
Well, he does, and it was remiss on my part. As I mentioned in my email, it's a long overdue invitation, not just for the Grapes of Wrath, but all the great work you're doing in the neighborhood.
We're cool now. You have my cast and liquor up.
I can't.
So much cheese.
Yes, yeah, all the cheese. The thank you, David from Eataly, for sending over that tray of food. That was from Eataly, and he sends his regards as well. Cool. And congratulations, because it was sold out. So you guys had the Grapes of Wrath, and I. What is the? First, tell us how the Gift Theater started.
We started in Iowa, really, at the University of Iowa in about 1998. We had the idea for it, and the idea was as simple as, what if we found a group of people that we loved and we trained together and we never gave up on each other? And the idea initially wasn't even to do plays. That kind of came at the school at Steppenwolf, where we were applying all this great physical theater that we learned in Iowa to text. And we were like, oh, we can actually combine both these worlds. And then we wanted to put it in an underserved neighborhood. So, of course, our first show was at the University of Chicago, very impoverished demographic. And you know, we rented around like every theater company for about 3 years. And then Will and I said, that's enough. This is not what we want to do. And we sat down over a bottle of wine and we ended it. And we said, we're not producing until we find a space in a neighborhood that's starving for something.
You know?
And ironically, we found it in my neighborhood in Jefferson Park.
And you grew up in Jeff Park. Where'd you go to high school?
St. Pat's.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, I went to Lane Tech. I took two buses and a train to get out of the neighborhood.
I took,
because my choice was Taft, was our neighborhood school.
Of course, yeah.
What were you going
to
say?
What was so weird was that only after we moved into the Gift in about 2005, we found a black and white photo of my grandpa, who was a beat cop, standing in the vestibule of 4802 North Milwaukee in like 1964 on a snowy evening. So that seemed like a pretty good omen that we were on the right track.
No, you were definitely in the right place. And again, thank you for bringing the theater into the neighborhood. And it is constantly sold out because people have subscriptions. They want to do, you know, they want to do something in the neighborhood. Because a lot of times, and I want to talk to the rest of our guests too. We have the casting director, M. Joy, in studio with us as well.
Hello.
And the cast of The Grapes of Wrath, we have Martel. And by the way, what was your Twitter handle, Mr. Martel?
Yeah, that's Mr. Martel.
Let me find. Hold on a second. Let me get your. Hold on a second. I got to find a cord.
Gonna have 100,000 followers by an hour from now.
Let me see if this is. Let me see. Talk right now. Let me see if that's all set.
Is that test, yeah,
there
test,
we go.
Test.
You're all set. Thank you,
Mr. Martel.
Mr. Martel. Do I have to call you that for the rest of the show?
I mean, if that jives with you, that's
Mr. Martel. Where are you from originally?
Philly.
From Philly? I just got back from Philly this morning.
Oh, you better stop.
No, I won't. I was at the Reading Terminal yesterday and had Barrett's ice cream.
I did it right.
It was fantastic. I have to say, Philly is one of the, and I love my city, some great food here. Underrated food city is Philly. Unbelievable. Cheesesteak, fine, whatever, but all the rest of the food, fresh and really, and great servers, too. It's a great restaurant town.
Oh, you had great servers? Yeah. I'm happy you had good
Okay. The East Coast is a little rough. Philly's a little rough around the edges. And so whenever I met someone nice, I took a selfie with them.
So you got two pictures, right?
Exactly. Both at Barrett's. Yeah, really great food. And Diego, where are you from? F. Diego.
That's it.
I'm sorry. No, that's going to stick just because I keep saying it over and over again.
I know. If you're going to drive people wild on Twitter, I'm trying to find it. I grew up in Chicago.
Okay.
Born and raised in Chicago.
What neighborhood?
I bounced around.
Okay.
I bounced around. I went to high school in the Verbs, though. I went to high school in Niles West.
Niles. Okay, so you ended up on the north, mm-hmm. in the north part of the city. Well, outside of the city.
And then I came back to college at Roosevelt right over here.
That's a great school. I think that's another, speaking of underrated, I think that people, you know, because of all, like, they think University of Chicago, even UIC, but Roosevelt's a great place.
Especially as a conservatory. The conservatory program there has grown and changed so much since I've been there that, like, they're really striving to, like, be a contender yeah. in the conservatory scene.
Well, and Martell, I didn't mean to not ask you, where did you study theater?
I did undergrad at the University of Pittsburgh, mm-hmm. and then shipped off to Houston, Texas.
Do you have to ship from Pittsburgh? Is that how they do it?
It's the only way.
You sort of deployed. They deploy you from there.
It's a long river.
Yeah, it really is. Now, why Texas?
Oh, I auditioned for graduate programs because mm-hmm. I got my master's at the University of Houston.
Mm-hmm.
I met this guy kind of hanging out in the hallway, sort of skulking around, and he walked up to me and said, "Hey, buddy, you want to audition?" I said, "Okay, great."
Did he know you were in the theater department?
Was he in a band?
He's just asking people to audition. Yeah, right.
is that how casting directors do it? They just
don't
see somebody.
Tell our secrets.
This was at IRTA's, the like United Graduate School auditions and everything. But so I said, "Yeah, sure." And then I auditioned for him, and it was one of like the greatest auditions I had at the time. So I was kind of hopped up on that. Like, I need to study with this man, and that's how it happened.
Oh, that's a great moment. Mm-hmm.
That's great.
That's wonderful. And Jay, where are you from?
I was born in Kansas, but I didn't stay there for two.
Why do you sound so apologetic about it?
I was born in Kansas, but don't hold that against me.
It's not my favorite state, but I bounced around and moved around a lot as a kid.
And do you have a place that you can say you're from, or just do you like saying from?
If I had to say, am I from somewhere? It's Michigan. I did most of my growing up in Michigan.
What part?
A little town called Mason. It's about 20 minutes outside of Lansing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And what brought you to Chicago?
Acting.
Acting.
Yeah.
And did you come here for school?
I went to Illinois State University for undergrad for theater,
oh.
and then right.
How was normal?
What's that?
How was normal Illinois?
That's the most haunted town I've ever been in. There's nothing normal about it.
What do you mean by haunted?
The apartment I lived in was haunted.
Okay, come on. Okay,
I'm serious.
I'm serious.
We got to live here for a second, Jay.
What's that?
What do you mean that it was haunted?
So I lived in this studio apartment the whole time I was in Bloomington Normal. Or not a studio, like a one bedroom. And it was...
But the ghost had the bedroom, and you could never go in there. So
I thought this was a really cool fact about the apartment when I moved in, and then things quickly changed that you would walk out of the front door of the apartment to the parking lot, and 5 feet past the parking lot was one of the largest cemeteries in Bloomington Normal. And then there were just a handful of experiences in that apartment that, you know.
So you started suspecting that perhaps the building was a built over part of what was formerly the cemetery.
Yeah, I don't know. But Bloomington Normal is also, and not trying to throw shade, I love my time there, but it's just a strange town. It's just, there's a weird energy to that place.
No, and did you end up finishing up there? Or you know,
I did, I absolutely, yeah.
And
yeah.
then you ended up moving to Chicago?
The day after I graduated.
I know where I'm headed.
Yeah.
And MJoy, where are you from?
I'm originally from, okay. I usually say Seattle, Washington, but that's a lie because I'm from Renton, Washington, which is 20 minutes away from Seattle, but nobody knows what that is.
So that's all right. We'll Seattle. Take Renton, yeah. Renton, yeah. Washington. That's
yeah.
great.
Yeah, I went to grade school by a Kmart. So,
yeah. By a Kmart?
Yeah. So
convenient. Got all your supplies right next door.
Yeah. Shopping.
All the blue light shopping. That's
exactly,
I love that.
Exactly.
Do you still go to Kmart? Does it give you flashbacks of grade school?
I really don't want to talk about it.
Okay.
I did live by the Sears on Lawrence for a while, so it was similar.
Oh, yeah.
Similar
no, I could, ab- yeah. Absolutely.
You know the one.
And then they ended up being owned by the same company. Yeah, I know. So then that seemed like too much of a marriage of weird past.
A little too much.
I like the idea of your relationship with department stores. As you got old.
That's how like, you can track my journey.
And then I met Target and I never looked back. We've been together ever since.
But right now it's me and Mariano's. But yes, yes.
Yeah,
okay.
You have arrived. We are hanging out with the cast of The Grapes of Wrath and the ensemble of The Gift Theater. Right? Does this
not all here, though.
They're not all here. Well, some. How many ensemble members do you have at the Gift Theater?
32, if we count the dead guy.
Thank you for not bringing everybody, including the dead guy.
He may be here talking about ghosts.
Yeah. There you go. That's why. Yeah, and that's what triggered that.
Jay's our ensemble member in the room, and then Diego and Martell were guest artists, and And MJoy does casting for us and also runs the Chicago Inclusion Project.
Oh, wonderful. Well, when we come back, we'll find out how the run was and find out if you have anything that happened. I'm sure there are stories because every night is a different performance depending on your audience. If you have any stories you want to tell me, let me know.
Oh, yeah.
And yeah, feel free to share because they don't know. The audience won't. They're not listening going, that was me. You know, tell me about all the cell phones that went off. No, and the good stuff too. More after this on 720 WGN. You are listening Pretty Late. I'm your host, Patty Vasquez, live in the Allstate Showcase studio. I am joined by Michael Patrick Thornton, who is the creator. What do you call yourself? Creator, mastermind behind the GIFT Theater?
No, not the mastermind. The co-founder and artistic director.
Co-founder? Okay, fine. Co-founder. I have to share the title with somebody.
I can't call myself the mastermind.
Oh, right, I'm sorry. Then I will. Mastermind Michael Patrick Thornton. And what is the other co-founder's name?
Will Nedved. Will's a playwright and a screenwriter who lives in Los Angeles, and Will and I met at the University of Iowa.
And you do a lot of work in Los Angeles as well, yes?
I did.
You did?
I'm washed up now.
What do you mean you're washed up?
Well, I did get recognized in the basement.
He totally did.
Right, by a private practice fan today.
Yes?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, that's lovely.
I'm taking the elevator up. No, I did. I did a TV show on ABC called Private Practice for a couple of years. Yeah, and then I just did a great movie directed by Erica Weiss, who's our ensemble member, who also directed Grapes of Wrath, and Caitlin Parrish, called The View from Tall, which premiered at the LA Film Festival.
Oh, lovely.
So that's
what you call being washed up then. Is that
yeah. I keep busy. Well, you know, people aren't knocking on the door for people in wheelchairs to work on TV and film. So you kind of have to make your own way a little bit. So.
Well, but the thing is to cut through that regardless isn't easy anyway. I mean, it's.
Oh, yeah.
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 It's a lot of work. And
yeah.
And so is the let's talk about The Grapes of Wrath, which is the production you guys have just wrapped on Sunday. Again, I went online. George kept telling me, and I'm like, I can't. I'm one of those people, I'm like, I have to. I don't know I can do something until the day of. So then when I tried on one day, it was gone. I mean, it was 2 weeks out. It was already sold out.
You should just subscribe, and then we'll get you in.
I will do that. Hold on a second. Let me get online. How do I subscribe? What's the website?
TheGiftTheater.org.
And it's Theatre. Yes.
Theatre.
Yes. I have to. Otherwise, will it autofill? Will it autofill?
We bought both of them. So yes. If you type in the other one, it'll go to it.
And those of us who spell it the other way, the less classy way, appreciate that.
It's okay. We're in Jefferson Park for a reason.
I know. That's the thing. I mean, Jeff Park is it's a working class neighborhood. A lot of cops and firefighters.
It is, sure. But, I grew up there, and anyone who grows up in Chicago and wants to be in the arts, I think it's the same story that your heroes move away.
Right.
And, if we never want to read another article about are the arts dying, is theater dying, then I think we'd be well served by people making the decision to grow their arts organizations in neighborhoods that people kind of don't care about or forgot about.
And their art in general, their skills. There was a comic in here earlier, Kristen Toomey, who had posted, I'm tired of people treating Chicago like a starter wife.
Right,
because everyone wants to go to New York, to LA. I remember when I decided I do stand-up comedy, and I told a comic that I was staying. She's like, well, Chicago's kind of like the high school for comedy. I know. Yeah, I mean, you can go and you can get work and you can find other ways to make a living, but this is always where I try to make my home. Do you guys, is Chicago, I mean, I'm not saying is it a destination, but do you feel that you can grow, especially with a place like the GIFT Theater giving you an opportunity or other theaters like that throughout Chicago? Diego? F. Diego?
Yeah.
Sorry.
It's
Diego. It's an off-air joke, and I apologize.
Yes, to you,
your family, everyone.
Off-air joke.
Know
I'm on board. I'm on board. What's it like doing theater in this town? It's a great town. Theaters pop up always because people in this town are desperate to tell stories.
Yes.
And that is a very important piece of how things are done in this town. Like you find people who are telling a story that you get behind and you invest yourself in it because you want to be a part of it. I mean, nobody in this game is doing it for the money. Like,
no, really?
You want to tell, yeah, that them live theater, big bucks. Nope.
Well, do you feel that the pressure of having to go and audit? I mean, if you audition for commercials and things like that, or, whatever, now there's so much television and film being done here. Do you have agents or are you registered, with your Shirley Hamiltons or your Stewart or whatever?
Absolutely.
Yeah, definitely.
You end up in a room with the people who look like you. My favorite's always for female comedians. It's always we needed a Tina Fey type, and you walk in there, everyone's got glasses, it's a churn and burn, right?
Yeah,
and it's always it's a numbers thing too.
It's a numbers thing, and it's you have to fill a very specific role for people sometimes, and sometimes
it's also a little clicky.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, that's kind of the thing too, is you have to like find that, because with MJoy.
Oh no, he looked like he was going to say.
No, I'll kick it to MJoy.
I think Chicago is a destination, and actually,
exactly.
Like, yeah, it's clicky because that's the nature of the industry. But, but also, I think less so here than in LA or New York, where you have to be very much your type and expressively so.
Right.
Whereas I feel like people come to Chicago for on-camera stuff, but also theater stuff, to find people who look like people and who are people. And yeah, you do end up in rooms that. Of your kind,
right?
Because that's the nature,
and that's changing a little bit, though, isn't it?
Much better than it has been,
right?
Which isn't saying much, but I do think that like Chicago is a destination for that reason, that people are hungry for the real, you know?
Yeah. And when you decide to tell a story, the Grapes of Wrath, is there an element of what story do you want to tell now? You know, how does this fit with what's going on culturally,
100%. Yeah. I think my job, you know, my job is to ask questions through the form of theater that we're interested in and we don't know the answers to. You know, my job isn't to present the audience with any kind of finger wagging didactic. This is how the world is, you know. When I was reading for that season, we had already had Michael Brown and Eric Garner killed. And so you try to think, you know, what can you do with your tiny theater in this tiny part of Chicago and, you know, North America on this planet to talk about what's going on. And what we found at The Gift over 15 years is that audiences respond better when you hold up the mirror in a way that is framed in a classic, right? So there's a little bit of remove. So something like The Grapes of Wrath, which we all have preconceptions of, it's Henry Fonda or it's Gary Sinise, whatever. Well, you know, what if we told it differently?
Sure.
You know, and so that was kind of Eric and I's initial concept of it, is to tell a parallel story, a mixed race Jode family, and then MJoy's expertise on casting. You know, we were able to put together an American family that humanized that story and shook it up and shattered it. And for a lot of people, will be the first time they saw that play, which is kind of amazing.
Sure.
But
it's something that they were made to read in high school, freshman or sophomore
year. Exactly.
Year.
You know, I think what we do is we actually sell love in the form of theater.
He's so noble over here.
But it's true.
But people are hurting. You know? And, you know, it breaks my heart every morning to get on Facebook or see a friend of mine who is, you know, had a bad encounter with the police or is terrified to get stopped and whatnot. And you try to think, what can you do? And so to put together this amazing cast is literally the least that I can do as a citizen.
Right. So empathy, you know, you can't impose empathy, but you can hopefully open someone's heart to it.
No. And that production had a gorgeous, Diego composed all the music. And I think his litmus test was if his girlfriend didn't cry, didn't make the show. But, you know, there is this phrase that they repeated at the end and the beginning, which was, if not now, then when? And I think that sums up what any great work of art should be. It should be immediate, and it should ask a question, and it should kind of pass the ball of responsibility to the audience and say, we can't get there by ourselves. We need you to come along with us. And I think that's definitively what live theater can maybe do best.
No, I agree. And especially because you're taking it in with other strangers, right?
Right.
And you're vulnerable to the moment. And as long as, and because people come to the theater because they want to feel something, you know.
Right.
They do. And they may not always, it may be uncomfortable, but, you know, it may be uplifting, or, you know, it may be something that changes them. So you have that opportunity every night. We are hanging out with the theater, the Gift Theater from Jefferson Park. What's the address again?
4802. North Milwaukee.
It's over by there. And we are talking to the cast members. We have Mr. Martell. Diego. I won't say it again.
The other way.
Diego J. And the casting director, MJoy, along with Michael Patrick Thornton, who is the co-founder and artistic director of the Gift Theater. You are listening Pretty Late. I'm your host, Patty Vasquez, live in the Allstate Showcase studio. And I am joined by the cast of, some of the cast of the Grapes of Wrath. They just wrapped up their run at the Gift Theater. Joining me is the co-founder and artistic director, Michael Patrick Thornton. And we also have MJ,
MJoy.
I know I got it wrong. I did right there. MJoy, who is the casting director. MJ, yeah. Can I separate you two? F. Diego, could you?
Yeah, you got it.
Jay, Diego, and Martel also join us. And so how was the run? First of all, Diego, how was the run?
The run was great.
I saw the most of it.
If you're going to ask anybody, it's probably going to be me.
See how I knew? I was drawn.
You felt it.
Yes.
You didn't leave the stage ever.
I did not leave the stage except for like the last 10 minutes of the play.
And you were out during the first 15 minutes pre-show as the audience is coming in.
Yeah.
What kind of pre-show were you doing?
Playing some Dust Bowl carols.
Yes.
People came in and sat down. Dust Bowl carols.
Yes. Yeah. I love when they come around to the door to door. With the Dust Bowl carols.
Can someone open my can of peaches?
Yeah. Uh-huh. Let me get it out of my hobo bindle.
The dog's not looking too good.
Or it's looking great because I'm super hungry.
Kind of fatten that dog up. So you do some of the pre-show Dust Bowl carols.
And I watch the show. Like, that's my role as the narrator. I'm the storyteller. I'm kind of telling the in-betweens of what's happening in this journey. But I'm also watching the show to sort of tell the audience, watch this part. It's just kind of give that sort of subtle. I'm watching. Mm-hmm. You watch, too. Mm-hmm. And so I saw everything. I saw the few times because our man Jay here chose to portray Uncle John as a blind gentleman. Jay ran into some things on the set.
That
just
makes
periodically.
Sense.
Stuff happened.
Stuff
happened.
A woman, I don't think I told you guys this, a woman dropped her water, sitting right on the floor, a woman dropped her water bottle, it rolled on the stage.
No.
Yeah.
Pretty, and like, if that were me, and my water bottle rolls on stage, it's gone. Like, I'm sitting there and I'm like, well, maybe they'll kick it back to me. Maybe that water bottle's just in this scene now. And it was during Grandpa's funeral scene,
so
instead of having that sort of like gone attitude, she's like, I'll get it. And she gets up, and not in the way that you might get up with like a sense of urgency, like you don't want to disrupt the play.
You want to draw attention,
let me walk over to it, let me like get a power stance so that I can really bend down and like grab it. And I could see Michael, I could see him just kind of like, Grandpa's dead, oops, let me get around this lady.
See, this is all the good stuff that I missed. And I missed so much.
And I'm watching this blind. From up on a platform far away, like, oh no, what's gonna happen? I can't do anything.
What are they gonna do about
them?
That lady?
I can't be like, look out.
He's having Usher run in and tackle her.
She retrieved her water bottle and made her way back to her seat, but it was definitely like...
Yeah, you gotta let that water bottle go.
Yeah.
Was it gin? Why was it so important that she got the water bottle back?
I mean, jeez. By the way that she got up to get it, you could tell that it wasn't terribly important.
Sure. Oh.
It was more like the way you get up to get something that's like, I probably shouldn't leave that there. Let me get up.
Yeah. Sure. I had to take some medicine later.
Jay, what was harder, doing the fight sequence in Richard III or climbing up that ladder in Grapes of Wrath?
Oh, my God.
Oh, yeah.
I think, you know, it was Grapes of Wrath. Towards the end of the play, you know, there's a young girl gives birth to a stillborn baby, and I'm tasked with taking this baby and burying it. I don't bury it. I put it into a river. But I had this long...
It's not a comedy.
Spoiler.
No, yeah spoiler.
It's a barrel of laughs.
Remember?
So I have this long cross across stage, and I had to climb up this ladder to this second-story platform, and then there's no real railing on the platform, and I have to walk a number of feet to a wall blind.
In the dark a little bit?
Yeah.
Well, completely in the dark. My eyes were shut for the entire performance.
Yeah.
And it that was a really sort of scary but also like incredibly liberating moment. The technical element we had during that part of the show is just after this horrible thunderstorm, so all I could hear is just the rain. And sometimes the odd audience member weeping.
Yeah.
So it really did become like this very quietly holy moment.
Sure.
And also somewhat of a horrifying one. But yeah.
No doubt. I mean, do you like count your steps or just figure this is how far I went last time?
You know, I was talking to Mike the other night at our closing party and I was saying like it really is some daredevil type stuff. Like right. I used a cane during the show and you really do start to develop this sure. sonar.
Right.
And I'm legally blind in real life, so I also have some unique ways of navigating my world, but you do really develop in that complete darkness this insane sort of sonar sense that sort of pings you around.
Mm-hmm.
And you do start to get this weird like geographical layout in your head. Your mind, after a certain amount of time, I found like a few weeks into the run, once things really started to deepen, that your mind is almost giving you a weird outline geography in sort of your imagination.
Right, especially when you're going through rehearsals and going through it over and over again and yeah. trying to find... Are you finding different moments every... I mean, that's the goal, isn't it, is what's going to happen tonight? I was listening to an interview before with another theater group with Justin Kaufman, and they were talking about... You know, it's that trick of you know how it's going to end, but you need to play. You need to, you know, be there as though you don't.
Well, I think yeah,
you have to.
You're absolutely right, and I think it's that idea of just being open to whatever happens is going to happen,
right?
And I'm going to be in service to what is happening, as opposed to any preconceived ideas.
Right. Now I do this.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah. That's tricky. Martel, how about yourself? What were some of your moments?
See, I went on as an understudy for the last 2 weeks of the run.
Mm-hmm.
I was understudying the actor playing Tom. So
not a small role.
Yeah. Much like Diego, I was on stage for a lot of the play. He was there for more than I was, but I was out there a lot.
I'm there the whole time and a little bit before.
He's still seeing it in his sleep.
But going on as an understudy, it was really surreal because I had seen the show so much and I had just been with, it was me and my script, and I recorded all my lines and everybody's cue lines for me. So I'd been listening to that for mm-hmm. so long that actually being in the show was this weird kind of like bizarro world.
Oh, stepping into it.
Yeah. Scenario where all these words, yeah, I've heard these words before, but never from this perspective.
Now they're yours.
So I got to do the show 8 times, and every time I was surprised by something else because I would actually see something that I hadn't noticed before, or something just kind of vibed with me that night that it hadn't the night before. Or, it was like one of the last weekend I like broke the ladder when I was walking up in. Like, you know, sometimes
you?
Stuff like that. Yeah, that was me.
I watched it happen. That I was heard me. The crack and I was like, Martel broke that ladder.
And I wasn't even cool about it at all. Like, I broke it, heard it, looked down and said, oh, yep, that's broke, and kept rolling.
No heads up to anybody. Should have that lady with the water bottle go over and do something about that. Man. Just leave that there for the next person.
Yeah, I was like, that we happens. Got like 10 minutes left. It'd be all right.
And Michael, how big is the theater? This is an intimate theater. We haven't even talked about that
We're
part
the most
of this.
Intimate equity theater in the city of Chicago. So the gift is 45 seats.
It's 45. I said 35 mm-hmm. earlier, but it's 45 seats.
45 seats, yeah.
And how is it, how is it set up? Or do you change that depending on the production?
We have changed it. Yeah, I mean, we've had audience on an alley configuration on both sides of the stage for our production of Good for Otto. We've experimented with levels in that play. In this play, Diego was up very high on this bridge-like level. For the most part, the audience has stayed on one wall of the theater. You know, depending on which critic you talk to, it's either a shoebox or a bowling alley, but you know, we call it church.
So, see that makes sense to me completely. We are talking to the cast of The Grapes of Wrath. We have Martel, Diego, Jay, and we also have the casting director, M. Joy. I haven't even asked you about casting this, as Michael had mentioned a little bit earlier about rounding out this cast and having it reflective in a new way for the way perhaps people hadn't seen The Grapes of Wrath.
Yeah. Erica and Mike really had a vision to update it while still actually making it dramaturgically correct. So we were working hand in hand with Patrick, our dramaturg, who we can justify every single person cast in the show being on that stage in that time period.
Okay.
These are the people who would have been in these regions at that time. So the fact that this is the first, one of the only times I've ever heard of this being done with this production is... a little ridiculous, actually.
Right.
It's 2016, yeah. And this play has been around for a long time.
MJ is saying, what took you so long?
But yes.
And thankfully,
am.
you
but yes. I actually am. And it, you know, I remember Martel's audition for Tom, and all the auditions for Tom were black men, and those lines about police brutality and those lines about you know, they're gonna break us. Every single actor came in and broke our hearts because of who was speaking the words. Because all of a sudden, it was a show that is a 2016 mm-hmm. production of Grapes of Wrath, even though we did set it when it was set. And I think that there's major power in that.
Yeah. I mean, I'll never forget when I got that email to come in and audition. I read who I was reading for, and I'm not going to lie, I thought in my head, like, yeah, okay. You want me to read for Tom? Like, in my mind, this never happens. Even though I knew I was actually going in for it, it was so alien to me. And then here I am now, 8 shows afterwards, I actually did it. But in retrospect, that's so sad.
Yes.
Yes. Yeah.
And I just got to add, too, like, when the big scene that MJ was referring to, there's a scene in a play where Tom sort of finally loses his cool, and he's talking to his mother, and he is talking about this police brutality and how his people are always being beaten down, and they, you know, they're always fighting this fight. And having two black actors play that scene just gave this scene a level of power that you could feel the audience every single night of the show. Once we got to those moments, you could feel them all sort of tense up. You could feel people holding their breath. Mm-hmm. I mean, the energy in the room just completely shifted on a dime. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And there's no way you would have had that with two white actors in those roles. No, there's just no way.
And I mean, in that show, it for me at least, it touched on the idea that this oppression is systematic. Mm-hmm. It's not just police. Mm-hmm. It's not just like some invisible, like the man. It's this, the whole system was turned against a specific group of people from the beginning. I mean, the show starts, Tom comes home and finds out that his family's been booted out of the house that they had been living in for generations because the bank didn't want them there anymore because they couldn't afford it. And then he finds out that they're at his uncle's house, and things just progressively get worse, but it's never just one person doing it. It is like the entire environment and the situation is just stacked against them. And it's awful. And it's so true today, just in
so
different
many people. Yeah.
Yeah, it's just different circumstances and different specifics, but it's still the case, which is really, really heartbreaking.
And I mean, just this kind of metaphor of, like, you know, finding the picture of my grandpa, who was a police officer, in the vestibule of this theater where we're telling that story. You know, when I read that line in the play about whoever there's a cop beaten up on, it went right through me. You know, I come from a family of police. I've come from 3 generations. Most of the men in my family are police officers. Mm-hmm. You know, we're talking about 200 years of service for the city of Chicago.
Sure.
And the kind of egregiousness that's going on, you know, is nowhere near the solar system of any of their characters. You know, and to have them standing ovations for this play, you know, to bring a conversation together is kind of a rare moment and a rare opportunity in mm-hmm. the theater. Hopefully it nudges the trajectory of us all towards, you know, a better city and a better tomorrow.
Well, and that's the goal of the GIFT Theater, is to keep telling stories that are as impactful as the Grapes of Wrath. We are doing a little bit of a rap party for the cast members. And there
and
are people.
Guy.
And that
guy.
I know. They can't hear us, unfortunately, on Michigan Avenue.
Oh.
So I if they had their app. Oh, maybe they're listening to you right now. That would be
maybe
helpful.
Maybe they're following Diego on Twitter.
Maybe.
that's a different show. They're listening to a different show. Maybe.
Is she trying to give you her number, Marcel?
More with our new friends. I'm Pretty Late with Patty Baskett, 720 WGN, and the people outside. We're not inviting them in, though. Someday I really got to record the off-air conversations because they're so much fun, but then I would worry people would know I was recording them, and then they wouldn't be as... Yeah, it would not be the same at all.
Right, because no one records our conversations in this country.
I know. What are you talking about? What? That's why I just save it. I don't talk all day long until I come here. My family finds me very quiet. They find it hard to believe I have this job. You have some great productions coming up very soon as well.
We do. So we've
at the GIFT Theater, by the way, for those of you just joining us.
Yes. So the GIFT has just had its 15th anniversary season. We have one more show coming up in the anniversary season called A Life Extraordinary, which is a world premiere by Melissa Ross. But the we've done everything you're not supposed to do, right?
Okay.
Like we've put a theater in an untested neighborhood. We made the theater Equity. We've done new plays.
Explain to people who don't know when they hear the
Equity
words Equity.
It's union.
Okay.
Just that when I say Equity,
is it because of the neighborhood? gotta be union in Jefferson
Park.
Yeah,
you know, and you can't see because this is radio, but I'm in a wheelchair right now because I got very sick in 2003 and had a spinal stroke, and it was only because of my Actors Equity insurance that, you know, we didn't have to sell my parents' house, and it picked up an exorbitant amount of money. And so I run an ensemble theater, so the people who work for me should have the exact same opportunities that I do. So we're rare like that. There's theaters that will encourage their ensemble to not go Equity too soon. And, you know, if our ensemble members say, I'd like to join the union, get insurance, we do whatever we can to do that. It makes shows very expensive. So we've done three back-to-back-to-back insanely ambitious shows. We had Good for Otto, which had 15 people. We had Richard III, which had 16 people.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then Grapes had 19.
Large cast.
So, you know, you're just never supposed to do that. but we did, and it was great, and it all worked out. But next year is dedicated to Epic Intimacy.
Epic Intimacy.
Yeah.
Okay.
So we have three world premieres, all written by women. Mona Mansour, Claire Keitchel, and Janine Neighbors are the three playwrights. And I'm co-directing one with Jessica Thebus, but all the directors are women, too. So we had all world premieres by men last year, and now we complement the other side of the coin with all world premieres by women.
Well, in the theater community in Chicago, I know there's been some a few headlines for other theaters where there have been issues. Is that something?
It did play a role. Yeah. I mean, not to get ahead of your question.
Yeah,
but,
no.
You know, I mean, I what happened at Profiles was disgusting and offensive and awful and deplorable. And as a white guy who runs a storefront ensemble theater, I have an extra responsibility to make sure that the women who work there feel extra protected, especially when it's an ensemble that runs on the emotional vulnerability and honesty in our acting, which requires kind of a level of trust that was so decimated by what happened at that place. So absolutely, it in some ways that informed the season to say, we're putting our women forward and we're going to show you that storefronts can be run with grace and dignity and inclusion and access. And we're better off that theater's gone.
Well, I came to that story later because in Chicago there have been controversies at not just Profiles, but at various improv organizations as well. Yeah. And we've actually invited some of those folks on the show to talk about it. And I'm trying to get both sides, but it becomes a hard conversation, I think. People get their stand their battlegrounds. Mm-hmm. So I think the thing is to keep showing up the way you do, and to keep providing opportunities to tell stories, to have artists find a place that is, as you said, safe, where they can grow. So you have the ability to buy a membership subscription.
We do. We really are buoyed by our subscribers. We lost 3 or 4 subscribers this year, and this was hysterical.
Do you track your subscribers? Do you like call them and go, what happened?
Of course we do. Yeah. Of course we do.
Okay.
And they said, we love you. We're so glad you're in the neighborhood. We just were hoping for some more new plays.
Because we had
Richard III and Grapes of Wrath. And I said, can I quote you on that? Because you just said the opposite of what every artistic director in the country hears, right? Which is, why are you doing new plays? We want to hear,
I don't know these stories. Why
are you doing but they ended up resubscribing anyway.
Did they end up seeing the productions, the Grapes of Wrath?
I believe they did, yeah.
Do you have a chance to talk to audience? Do you hang out and talk to audience members after the show, or...?
Yeah, I don't really have a choice. the way it's all set up, like, I come out of the dressing room and the lobby's right there, and if people are still standing there, then
we're going to
have an interaction.
They'll chat you up, yeah.
Some people have, like, some people really like it, and some people, you could see the veil pulled away from their eyes. You can see...
Yeah.
You can see, I read this in high school, I saw it a bunch, I heard about it a bunch at Steppenwolf, but this version is really, really says something today. And that's, I think, the thing that I am most proud about this show. Like, I do lots of shows in this town, and I'm always happy to do everything I jump into, but, like, as an artist, as an actor, it means something to have a strong social commentary in the story that you're telling, to be relevant in a way that is thought-provoking,
right,
that is the same and yet so different.
And there's always many nights you're leaving the theater and you have audience members who are waiting outside, waiting to speak. And this was one of those shows that on many nights, the audience members were still so upset that speaking wasn't really an option.
Yeah. Oh, sort of the somber mood when you're leaving. Well, I look forward to, and I'm coming. We should all go to the giftheater.org to get information about the upcoming productions and the opportunity to get a subscription. I want to thank you so much for finally, I'm so glad that I finally invited you onto the show, is what I mean.
Oh, this is great. Thanks for letting us have a little cast party.
We will do it again. Cheers. No, awesome. My pleasure. Great. And thank you to Italy for kicking in the wonderful tray, and our friend David, who was the cheese and meat technician who sent over all that
very well.
And the olives.
And he techniqued it very well. Yeah,
cheese and meat technician? What do you need to get that job? Is that postgraduate work for that job?
I believe it was. Just a little bit. Does anyone want to share their Twitter handles before we run off? I know that, was it F. Diego? No.
One more for the road. No. I'm gonna say it right.
Okay.
I think. It's at Dieguito Sol. That's at DIEGITOSOL. Bam.
Okay. But no bam.
Oh, I'm not on social media. It's the devil.
Okay. Fair enough.
You can follow me at Mr. Martel. That's Mr. spelled out. And Martel, M-A-R-T-E-L, with a little underscore in between.
I spelled your name wrong. I apologize for that already. It's
MJ? All good.
And I'm at Joy of M. That's J-O-Y-O-F-E-M.
Wonderful. Michael?
Thornton MPT.
And the theater has their own Twitter as well?
We do. The Gift Theater.
Excellent. I look forward to seeing you guys again. You are listening Pretty Late. I'm your host, Patty Vasquez, live in the Allstate Showcase studio, and I am joined by Adam Selzer, our I want to call you resident, but that sounds that sounds weird. But our pretty late resident ghost aficionado, expert.
Sure, sure. Yeah.
Tour guide of Chicago, historian, author. Mm. All those things.
Author who does all kinds of neat stuff.
All kinds of neat stuff. Well, welcome back. And you have a special book. Esmeralda, I have a copy for you of Adam's latest book called Just Kill Me.
Oh.
Yeah. I'm very excited.
Yeah, Esmeralda, you're alluded to in it.
Mm-hmm. It's good to be alluded.
Wait,
it's good to be alluded to.
That, Megan, the character, wouldn't have known the person doing traffic's name, but she mentions the woman doing traffic.
Nice. I'll put it on my IMBD list.
That sounds fantastic. You're alluded to without name. And tell us a little bit about Just Kill Me.
Just Kill Me is a novel about a ghost tour guide who makes places more haunted by killing people at them.
I'm sorry, what?
It's a ghost tour guide who makes places more haunted by killing people at them.
Okay, so in order to drum up more business.
Yeah, you know, things have been kind of slow, reviews have been kind of tepid. You know, it's something people genuinely complain about after ghost tours. Well, I didn't see a ghost. It's like, if I could guarantee you were going to see proof of the afterlife, I'd be charging a lot more.
So how does this murderer also then make the ghost do stuff?
Well, they have there's a special technique they've uncovered called punching people in the brain.
I'm sorry.
Punching people in the brain. It's a very quick, clean.
Everyone's already biting her fingernails.
It is a quick, clean, and easy way to kill people that sort of reproduces the effect of the ghost. They don't know how the science exactly works, but something gets left behind that people sort of perceive as a ghost.
Okay.
They mainly kill volunteers from the nursing home where they work as their day job.
Okay. You have a dark brain. Someone punched you in the brain?
No, I wouldn't be here if somebody punched me in the brain.
No, that's a good point. Good point. No, you're not a ghost.
Yeah, but then Megan, the girl in the book who was working for the ghost tour company, realizes that other people are disappearing as well.
Right.
And a couple of the obnoxiously drunken customers, you know, step off the bus and never come back on the bus. And then the rumor starts to go around that she might be next.
Right. Okay.
So. So dark comedy.
It is, yes, it is a dark comedy, and you specialize in doing the dark comedies.
It's kind of my specialty. Yeah,
yeah, it's kind of a little bit. You Play Me Backwards is the one I've read, which is a lot of fun. And what now? Do you have who in your? This obviously comes from your experience.
Oh, yeah, I've spent 10 years in the ghost tour business. So yeah, a lot of things that happened to you in the ghost tour world, I ended up writing into the book.
Well, what kind of tricks do you other ghost tour business runner do they? any of the businessmen involved in the ghost tours try to force situations, you know, like trick people into thinking they're ghosts?
Oh, yeah, now and then, yeah. Anytime you see them running around with electromagnetic field readers, you know, they'll say, like, if this comes on, that means that there's a ghost here. And of course it will. I mean, especially in the city, there's so much electromagnetic field bouncing around in here.
Right.
I mean, it's not like they're ever actually using the equipment properly to begin with.
Right. And,
yeah, there's all kinds of little tricks people can do. And I try to shy away from that because I'm always afraid I'm going to get caught.
Right. Well, that, how humiliating. And also, you kind of, I would feel bad for, like, tricking people.
Yeah, that too. I feel bad about getting caught. I don't like people. I don't really necessarily like encouraging people to think stupid things. if you think that your phone buzzing means there's a ghost in the room, you know, where does this all lead?
Okay, now, we just had a guest leave who said that his apartment was haunted.
Oh, sure.
So
it could be.
It could be.
Yeah, well,
but it's not, but on the
I'm very skeptical about these things, but a lot of times it's just in how you perceive what's going on.
Right. It's your brain is filling in gaps.
Yeah, your brain fills in the gaps.
Right, exactly what's actually happening.
Mm.
So you've never had a ghostly experience?
I've seen some pretty weird stuff. Nothing I'd really swear in front of a panel of scientists was a dead guy or anything.
All right, fair enough. Esmeralda, have you ever had any ghostly experiences?
I have not. Mm. And I'm pretty open to it, you know, but I... No.
No.
Nothing I can say. Mm. Yes, that was a ghost.
Right.
Yeah, there's certainly place, any time I'm alone in a large house at night, my brain starts filling in the gaps, for sure.
Right.
And I remember, you know, my parents' house, I would, like, run like hell up to the bedroom at the end of the night.
Do you have people who, you know, feel compelled to tell you ghost stories?
Oh, sure.
How often do you hear ghost stories from, like, when you're on the tours?
When I'm running ghost tours, it happens quite a bit.
Yeah.
Right now I'm running architectural tours, so it doesn't come up too often.
No architecture then, stories but, when you're on the
Oh, yeah, there's a lot of my grandfather worked in that building, or an awful lot of, I'm sure you know all about my town, that's where Al Capone had his resorts, which is, you know, and it's every other town.
Everyone's got a story about Al Capone.
Everybody's got Al Capone. That right guy really got around, man.
He really did. I was just in Philadelphia. He had been in the penitentiary.
He was in prison there, yeah.
Yeah, which I know is a real thing, but I'm like, really? All the way in Philadelphia, I got to deal with Al Capone?
Uh-huh. Well, all the time he spent staying away from the cops here, he stepped off the train in Philadelphia. He was in jail like that.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah. They got him fast. It was almost, a lot of people thought he might have, it was shortly after the St. Valentine's Day massacre. A lot of people thought that he quite deliberately got himself arrested and, you know, got himself a nice posh cell in Eastern State Penitentiary.
To sort of hole up after
just
the massacre?
Just to hole up after the massacre, yeah. You know, lay low until things cool down.
Sure, why not? Just,
yeah.
Take the heat off.
Yeah, a lot of people suspect that he could probably, you know, I guess the person who arrested him was somebody that he knew slightly.
Mm-hmm. So some of the locations, do you have specific themes? Do you do the gangland, the mobster ones?
I have done some gang tours,
right,
occasionally.
And people want to see Dillinger's spot.
Oh, yeah, where
the
Dillinger
Biograph
was shot by the Biograph. The St. Valentine's Day Massacre site isn't too far from that.
How about the Purple Hotel was one, but that's kind of far out.
It's mostly more recent stuff too.
Right.
Is that gone now? The Purple Hotel.
It is gone now.
I think
yes.
It is. Yeah.
And that is kind of recent. That's
the
family still here.
Wicked air hockey table there too.
Did they really?
Great air hockey table.
Oh, now I feel like I missed out on air hockey.
Yeah.
That's kind of.
I mean, I never went there when it was really party central back in the day.
It was a strange building.
Yeah. I always picture, like, you know, that hotel they go to in Almost Famous, the
sure.
Riot House. Yeah, that's kind of what I picture with the Purple Hotel.
Well, doing the architecture tour, you know, you see a lot of different buildings. I mean, the Purple Hotel is something that people recognize, obviously, in Chicago.
Yeah, we don't see it on the river.
No, but there is.
It's being way
so,
open.
Right, but so do you have any buildings that kind of stick out from the rest, though?
I think there are certainly some that stick out from the rest, especially at night, the way they got the Board of Trade lit up over on LaSalle Street. That
right.
just really almost sticks out like a beautiful sore thumb.
Exactly.
Beautifully
that was
sore
my question.
Thumb.
Yeah.
And that one certainly in certain ones who kind of stand out for being notably dull, I think. On the south branch of the river, there's all these 1960s and 70s office buildings blocking our view of Union Station. These horrible modernist buildings.
Do people have questions about the railroad, say the Amtrak station, which is Union Station, and Ogilvie? Is Amtrak
see just a little bit of it. Well, we talk a lot about air rights, which is the thing that in the 20s railroads figured out they could sell the air above the tracks for people to build on. So if you go along the river, like half of the buildings, sometimes you can see the trains, the Amtrak trains right underneath them.
Because
they're built on air rights.
They have the tracks, but above them.
Yeah, and above them is the building. It takes no small amount of engineering to make this work, but that's what architects do.
Yeah, no kidding. They can make miracles happen, as they have
pretty
in Chicago.
Pretty much, yeah. Certainly in Chicago they have.
Do you find yourself still finding, is it hard to find something new for you when you're doing the tours?
I can always find new stuff. Even on this one, I've done the same route over 100 times this summer.
Right.
And I counted a while ago. But yeah, I'm still finding new stuff. I've been looking. Union Station I've been looking into a lot. I'm trying to find the time when Al Capone was actually there.
Right.
So I'm trying to find one place on the tour route that I can actually trace Al Capone to.
To make The Untouchables an actual viable film.
Yeah. Elliot Ness was a real guy and Al Capone was a real guy. And that's about as realistic as it gets. It's a great movie, though.
Was there really a baby carriage going down the stairs?
I don't believe so.
Yeah, no, that's a great scene.
But I assume Capone was probably at Union Station. I haven't actually found like a smoking gun right yet saying that he was. There were some guys who were arrested lying in wait for him at Union Station, but he was smart enough to get off the train in Englewood instead.
Right, and he would probably have whatever his security or something.
Oh yeah, he was pretty good about keeping a low profile, right. Like sneaking into town, or like he'd take the train just to Joliet and then fly the rest of the way to Chicago.
What kind of research do you have to do? What would lead you to that smoking gun, do you think?
Something fine, like a reporter cornered him at Union Station and got a statement from him, or if he got arrested right off of the train at Union Station.
Right.
And I think Atlanta, there was a Union Station also that he pulled into once.
Yeah, a lot going down at the train
station. Yeah. Well, yeah, or if he'd left from that train station when he went to prison, but he left from Dearborn Station when he went to prison.
Right.
His brother Ralph was left from Union Station to go to prison.
With all the research that you do going through the newspapers, is there something you notice in sort of the evolution of the way, newspapers were sort of what they covered and how they covered it?
Up to a point. It varies tremendously by the paper.
Right.
There were always tabloids. And
sure.
After they started being able to publish photographs in the early 1900s, certain papers acted like a kid with a new toy.
Right.
I mean, like the William Randolph Hearst paper in Chicago, the Chicago Evening American, when there was the first automobile murder in the city, or anywhere really, the first person found dead in an automobile of a gunshot wound, it was out in the suburbs in 1904. They actually like recreated the crime scene in photographs.
Oh, man.
They took photographs of like all the stuff that was found in the guy's pockets, every piece of evidence they could. And their idea was like, say, we're publishing all this evidence. Look over this evidence carefully. You might know something.
Oh, boy.
So, it made people feel better about buying such a tabloid.
It's almost like it's the beginning of the interactive social media.
Yeah, kind of.
Put yourself in the story.
Oh, yeah.
How bizarre is that?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. What are some of the big ones from Chicago? Were this Sun-Times and the Tribune?
Well, those are the ones we have now,
right.
Sun-Times and the Tribune. But in back in the day, if you're in the microfilm archive, there's the Chicago, there's the Daily News, there's the Herald, the Examiner, the American, the Globe, the Mail, the Chronicle, the Record, the Times, the Daily Interocean, Evening Press, Evening Journal, Evening Post.
Imagine having all those delivered to your house, Esmeralda.
Press, the Dispatch. We can't get the Dispatch, but
imagine like
how long were they?
Yeah, really.
It varied a lot. A lot of them were just a few pages.
Just a few pages.
Yeah,
and were they by the location? Was it just by neighborhoods, or was that
no? It was all citywide.
Wow.
Yeah, neighborhood wise, there were a lot of smaller ones.
Well, I guess when you have radio and television, you may as well get the newspaper. Mm-hmm. See what happens.
Mm-hmm.
Well, and that's what's so important about journalism is that when you have, those are like, as you mentioned, that's how you find out whether or not find your sources, find your moments in history.
In a lot of cases, newspapers aren't always the most reliable source, but there's tricks you can learn to figure out whether they really had a reporter on the ground here,
right?
Or if it like squares with other people's accounts. And but a lot of times, they might not be the most reliable account, but they're the only account,
right? You've got to go somewhere. We got Adam Selzer in the studio. His new book, Just Kill Me, is available. How do we get a hold of this besides my copy?
Right now, it's still got a couple of weeks before it's officially out yet. If you go to adamchicago.com, that'll start linking you to everything.
To what, Chicago.com?
AdamChicago.com.
Adam Chicago. How'd you get that one? Nobody else wanted
it. I couldn't believe that. Yeah, nobody else had that.
AdamChicago.com.
Yeah.
Traditional spelling. More after this on 720 WGN. You are listening Pretty Late. I'm your host, Patty Vasquez, live in the Allstate Showcase studio. Joining us is Adam Selzer. He's a historian, a tour guide, does some ghost tours coming up soon as he got those dates announced on his website.
The ghost tour dates, I got a bunch of cemetery walks announced today and a couple of Devil in the White City tours.
Very cool.
Grave robbing tours, of course.
Well, you've got to do the grave robbing tours. Of course you do. Well, how else would you know how to rob a grave in the 1900s?
How else are you going to launch your career as a 19th century resurrection man?
Exactly. I don't want to do that. You can go to adamchicago.com to pre-order his latest book, Just Kill Me, which is a book he's written about a ghost tour guide who murders people in locations to generate more business for her ghost tour.
Mm-hmm.
I probably did it in a more wordy way, but I got it. That's a great idea. And you had a little bit of a story that you learned today about Chicago that you didn't know.
Yeah, there was a new one that I didn't know today. You know, I do a lot of...
I thought you knew everything.
I'm always finding
great.
New stuff in the archives, and somehow this one had eluded me. I was doing I do a lot of, like, talking headshots for cable shows. I was working with the Mysteries at the Museum today.
Mm-hmm.
It's a fun crew to work with.
That's cool.
And they, you know, sometimes I know the story. Sometimes they'll take my suggestions for stories, and sometimes they'll just say, hey, we want you to talk about this one. Because they know I can break things into sound bites pretty well and, you know, rearrange the wording and stuff. So they were telling me about this guy, Dr. Daniel Hale Williams, who was the founder of Provident Hospital. It was the first, one of the first interracial hospitals. It was down on 29th and Dearborn. So he was one of three black surgeons in Chicago as of 1893, and performed the first successful open heart surgery in the world.
Wasn't there a community of black doctors, like physicians and nurses, that was part of the city that people don't even know about?
Yeah,
the professionals.
Right.
Yeah, and that was that near
it,
that hospital?
It mostly came later.
Oh, it did.
Mostly later than this. Yeah, he was starting to train African American nurses, which nobody else was doing at the
right.
time. It was very difficult. Yeah, he's what we were talking about is that there's a couple occasions I found he actually did this more than once. He performed open heart surgery. The first was a guy who was he'd been stabbed with a sailor's knife.
And well, sure,
I
that
love the sound of that, a sailor's knife. It sounds even worse than a butcher's knife,
Yeah, it sounds like it's going to do some damage.
And he came in and turned out it had ruptured the pericardium, the sac that surrounds the heart. And Dr. Williams was able to do open heart surgery, stitching it up with cat gut.
Oh, God. And well, that
cat
makes sense.
Gut, and then it stitched up the rest of the wound with silkworm gut.
Well, the first does very well for tennis rackets.
Right.
Yes.
Right.
So that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
Use that up. It's organic.
Yeah. And that's kind of the secret of doing cable TV shows is finding words like sailor's knife, cat gut, mm-hmm. silkworm gut.
Oh, yeah. No, those play very well.
And those all come right out of either the new – there was one newspaper in Chicago that covered this at the time. The Chicago Daily Inter-Ocean covered it.
Chicago Daily Inter-Ocean?
Daily Inter-Ocean.
Do we know where that name came from?
I'm not really sure where that came from, honestly.
Now I have to find
but
out.
It was a very good paper, though. It was a very literate paper. So one of my favorite ones. It might be the one that I read in that era, besides the Tribune, of course.
Of course.
In the Tribune Tower right now.
Yeah. I mean, we don't want to make anybody angry.
Right.
Especially the Colonel.
I don't want to.
What drew you to history? Because I know I took my son to Philadelphia, and he's fascinated by the past and how we got here. What it meant to declare independence from the monarchy of England, and he's particularly fond of stories involving Benjamin Franklin. Did you have as a kid? Did you have somebody that you looked up to in history?
If somebody had told me about Benjamin Franklin's fart letter, then I would have liked him a lot better. And he wrote a whole. I can't remember who it was to some Academy of Scientists or something. Like, it was a half-joking letter saying, well, how come we can't use science to make farts smell better?
Okay. This is good.
He was kind of a prankster, was Ben Franklin.
But there's actually, I believe there are now undergarmets that do just that.
It's like
a filter now, yes. So was there anybody when you were a kid that you really liked and sort of inspired you to want to know more about history?
There were a lot of people that I read quite a bit about back in the day.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody that really would have made me wanted to be a history major or anything,
right.
though. I kind of fell into it really when I started doing the ghost tours, and I started doing and I decided I wanted to make sure I was getting the stories right.
Okay.
Because I found out a lot of them.
So you're a perfectionist is what you're saying.
Well, you know, I didn't want somebody else to do better research than I did.
Okay.
And so I started at least trying to get the history behind the stories down. And that, you know, I kind of got addicted to it. The newspaper archives are like, it's like going fishing. You toss out your date or your line and see what you pull back, and then you find totally different things.
But is everything on microfiche? How are you? Or is it on computer?
More and more newspapers you can get on are digitized now.
Good, because that microfiche will make you crazy.
Oh, yeah. It can. But however, there's only just the Daily Inter-Ocean and the Tribune of Chicago are really online.
Okay.
Very little else is available.
If someone wants to look for something online, how do they do keyword searches? And you have to go through the Chicago Public Library, I think.
You can get the Chicago Tribune through the Public Library.
Okay.
And that's, you can do a keyword search, you can do a date search.
Okay.
And a keyword search is a good start, but then to go with the date, and then once you've got a good story in the Tribune, I like to go down to the microfilm room and, you know, see what all the other papers said about the same thing.
Right, so you do cross-referencing.
Cross-referencing, see how they had different papers covered it, and see if there's any agreement or disagreement in, like, what a quote was.
Right.
And then just seeing what else was going on that day can be really helpful, too.
Oh, no kidding.
Yeah, like, I mean, we were talking about the phantom kangaroo of Jefferson. Jefferson Park. That that's a,
I'm sorry, the
what? It's a thing that I was researching. I got the Mysterious Chicago book coming out in October.
Okay.
And it turns out in the early 70s, there was this huge rash of sightings of a kangaroo around Jefferson Park.
No, that's not true.
I'm not sure if anybody remembers.
I've never heard. 312-981-7200.
I actually tracked down the cop who approached the kangaroo, according to the newspaper. He's still alive and well. I talked to him. He swears up and down. Yep, it's all true. It really happened. There really was a kangaroo. He even thought he probably knew where it came from. Apparently, some officer on this force kept a farm up in Wisconsin and had a couple of kangaroos and lived in the area where they found it.
What?
So, in any case, reading through all of the other newspapers about it, I realized something I wouldn't have noticed just from the Tribune. Is that David Bowie was in town that week.
Oh, see.
Anytime something weird happens, a reporter would be remiss in leaving out the fact that, you know, David Bowie is in town this week.
So the two might be related.
You know, I'm not saying there's a connection, but you got to take these things into consideration.
On the other hand, there was an animal kingdom at the corner of Milwaukee and Harlem Avenues.
Really?
They had exotic animals. Like, they would have I want to say, like, big cats. I don't want to say tiger, but there were full-size cages for exotic animals.
Right.
Which, you know, thinking it was like a mini zoo. And now that I think about it, it seems like a really bad idea.
Yeah.
Animal Kingdom was mostly a pet shop, but this was the way they would draw you in. They also had, Esmeralda, like the mechanical horse that you'd ride outside.
Of course.
I'm not dealing with it. I'm pretty sure I'm right about the Animal Kingdom having animals they probably should not have had.
Probably.
And I'm saying.
Yeah, I think a lot of the issues we still have with zoos now is like we still think of a zoo as like some Victorian guy's menagerie. You know? Or places like that where they just got like a tiger out in a cage.
Did you ever come across that, Esmeralda? Joliet, like a strange, somebody had like a strange collection of animals that you just knew didn't belong there?
I don't think so. Yeah.
Do you know that there's a company that rents out, like rent an animal? I was at a bridal party for our very own Nikki Allen, who is getting married, and they had an animal petting zoo with foxes and ferrets and a boa constrictor. And they actually were the company that provided the groundhog for Groundhog Day.
Really?
Yeah, so it goes all the way back to this. Whenever you need an animal, I believe it's called Rent an Animal, Chicago. But I don't think they had a kangaroo. I'm not entirely sure about that.
Adam, my heart's broken.
I know. We could have. Well, I want to know about this cop who thinks it came from Wisconsin.
Yeah,
did it hop all the way from Wisconson, or did it fall off a truck?
They think it must have.
Did he travel with it?
They think that he must the guy who owned the farm but lived in Chicago must have traveled with it or something.
Yeah, brought that for the weekend.
He didn't want to name names. He accidentally let the name slip while he was talking to me, but I didn't put it in the book.
You get it off the record?
Yeah, I'll keep it off the record.
You're a
good man. If he wants it off the record, I'll keep it off the record. But he would. He will still swear up and down, oh, yeah, that was a real thing. The general sense has always been among researchers, the newspapers probably made the whole thing up.
Right.
It became this huge phenomenon. President Ford made a joke about it when he was in town, okay. which today we would call that peak kangaroo.
Peak kangaroo. We are hanging out with Adam Selzer, who is the author of his latest book is called Kill Me, Just Kill Me, Just Kill Me, Just Kill Me, and it's available pre-order on his website, adamchicago.com. Can people find out the dates for your tours as well?
Quite a few of them, yeah. I'm still rolling out more. We're still working on getting everything up for October.
Excellent. Well, hang out. I want to talk about a couple of neighborhoods in Chicago. There were some contrasting stories. While I was gone, you know, I get DNA info, and I was, you know, just kind of to keep up with everything that was going on here. And I don't know if you saw this, Esmeralda. I want to talk about the Gold Coast being upset with gelato.
I saw that.
And the number of people that were shot on the South Side. You are listening Pretty Late. I'm your host, Patty Vasquez, live in the Allstate Showcase studio. And joining me is Adam Selzer, historian, tour guide. Yes, all around know-it-all. I just like to call you. Can I just call you know-it-all now?
Oh, great. Sure.
Do you read DNA info?
Sometimes, yeah.
I do. I do too, because I one of my problems, though, Esmeralda, I don't know if you do this when you click into DNA info. I'm like, I don't recognize this neighborhood at all. I'm like, oh, yeah, not New York.
Wait, what does that mean?
There's DNA info New York, right?
Oh, okay.
So if I don't change it over to Chicago, I'm reading, like, I don't recognize any of these places.
Oh, look at you.
I know. I'm like, I don't need to know. I mean, no offense, New York, but I just want to know what's going on in Humboldt Park or Logan Square. Or Beverly, stuff like that. But I was trying to keep up with what was going on in Chicago while I was in Philadelphia. And of course, the big thing on Facebook yesterday amongst Chicagoans was this sort of bizarre juxtaposition of a story of the folks in Gold, and we say the folks of Gold Coast, but I don't know how many people really it was, but they were anticipating the opening of this gelato joint, and once it opened, they were very disappointed, and they want to make their neighborhood great again by bringing in better gelato. And then above that story was the number of people that had been shot in the Belmont Austin Cragen area, and but that is our city. That is what it is. I mean, those are the extreme opposites of if only we had more of a gelato, if only our children didn't get shot on the streets. It's heartbreaking. And people were, there's a lot of, being rich must be hard, all that stuff.
Yeah.
But I mean, if people won't wake up to what's going on in their own city, then, I mean, I think we all do that to some extent.
Sure.
It's not my problem, not my block, not my neighborhood. And I want gelato. Mm-hmm. I want to watch TV. I don't want to get involved. I don't want to think about things. I mean, have you ever had that?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, of course.
You know,
I'm not going to lie. Yeah.
Just get distracted by things. And it was interesting being in Philadelphia, where this country started, where the decision, these men came from all the colonies together to decide that was it, that they were going to, they were going to write this out and proclaim their independence from the monarchy. And I was, we were hearing by the way, the Rangers at Independence Hall are fantastic tour guides.
Really?
They tell these great stories. I really recommend going, not on a hot weekend.
Right.
It was, the heat index was 103.
Ugh.
It was very, very, very hot.
It's hot as hell.
It was so hot. And I will say that we have a deeper appreciation for all things Chicago in my family now.
Yeah.
One, smells better here, cleaner. People are nicer. The Shedd Aquarium blows the Adventure Aquarium away. I will stand behind that. It was packed because everyone was looking for someplace cool to go on Saturday, and they all chose the Aquarium Adventure and chose to walk right in front of me. But when I was listening to the stories about why these men came together to decide that they'd had enough of being oppressed by the monarchy and that they were being taken advantage of, and basically were there to provide exports, and they wanted representation and things like that. And at the same time, the South, basically making a lot of their wealth on the backs of
right.
slaves. And
the irony was lost on no one at the time, too.
Right. And it was it's not that it suddenly occurred to me, but to be standing there and just sort of think, because there is an area where they talk about slavery and the dual trajectory of that journey. So, but at the same time, I was thinking, we're not that involved. I mean, I wonder what the level of interest and involvement was, that these representatives were coming together. Was everybody, were all the farmers, because you have to ride, you have to walk or ride your horse to get to the next, to your neighbor to say, hey, what do you think about leaving? What do you think about just doing this thing on our own?
Yeah, well, I'm sure they had, you always picture the meeting in the taverns.
Yeah, that's
to discuss
true.
These things. Yeah.
Yeah, you gotta have a pint.
Yeah,
you always meant like a big tankard.
A tankard, a flagon.
Well, and that's a thing also amongst the men.
Yeah,
it was a great trip. I do love history. My book, the thing that inspired me to become a history major, we were talking about this earlier, was the book Johnny Tremaine.
Really?
And I loved Boston. I was obsessed with Boston. My mom took me there for my 8th grade graduation. I love that. I don't get to travel as much. Do you get an opportunity?
Lately I do, yeah. The work that I do with school groups. I got to go to D.C. with a school group. I went to Nashville this year.
Oh, how'd you like Nashville?
Oh, Nashville's terrific.
It really is. Yeah. I want to go to Dollywood.
Yeah, we didn't go to Dollywood.
No, I want to go.
No, we went to the Opry. We went to RCA Studio B, which is one of the coolest tour stops I ever took anybody to.
Right.
Lots of fun stuff.
Do you fly or do you do tour buses with these groups?
I fly in, then ride around in a tour bus with them. I took their tour bus back to outside Toledo with them.
Right.
And then flew back from Toledo. Sometimes it's kind of my travel route can sometimes get a little convoluted with these things.
Yeah, I can imagine.
Depends on where I'm flying out of, where I can get a flight, or where their last stop is. Their last stop was in Mammoth Cave, Kentucky.
Mm-hmm.
And it's hard to get out of Mammoth Cave, Kentucky.
Yeah, you got to do some driving.
Yeah.
When you travel, and Esmeralda, have you had a chance to fly lately? You went to, you were in England. Not too.
I was. It was a, no. That was a couple of years ago.
God, it feels like it was recently.
I know.
Time flies.
Yeah, I haven't. I'm going to Boston in September.
Yay!
So I'll get to fly.
Have you been?
Then. Yeah, I was there a couple years back. I love it there.
I do too.
I think it's great.
I love Boston. And that accent. I can't get enough of it.
Yeah, that is fun.
It is a very fun accent. But when I was traveling, okay. So where are you on the etiquette of just that little recline on your seat. Do you?
You know, I would love to recline, but I just don't think it's very nice.
It's not very nice. You know, and yeah. You never ask the person behind you if it's okay.
If I really needed to, I might ask the person behind me if it was okay.
Right, because it's amazing how much
somebody,
of a difference.
If somebody ever asked me, I'm sure I would tell them yes.
Yeah, I do it on a case by case.
Yeah,
sort of observation. Because the guy I saw, I turned behind me, Esmeralda, and his knees were up, like it was almost over onto my. My armrest. I was like, yeah, this guy's not going to be able to handle that couple inches if I come back toward him. And the guy in front of me didn't recline his seat, but he was kind of a big dude. So even when he would move around, it would hit my knees.
Yeah.
And I'm short. I'm 5'6". I mean, that's not terribly short, but I have short legs, and I was getting beat up by this chair. I can't imagine. I had that.
Just don't fly on Spirit Airlines.
Don't get me started.
Yeah, we'll not get started.
Yeah, they charge you for both sides of the. I'm never going to get any sponsor dollars from Spirit Airlines if I just keep maligning their company.
Well, you can get the $2 they're going to give you.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure they don't. I don't think they give out that kind of money. You know?
Well, they have such a confusing policy of sort of what they charge for your carry-on versus your check bags, because they charge you more for the check bags. I mean, the carry-on bags than the checked, don't they? And they have you join this membership. It's like $9 to join, because then it's like cheaper to do all these other things. The sort of the pie chart, the pyramid of what it costs,
it's like the serious, the hidden fee airline.
Yeah,
totally.
If you can just fly, if you need to fly someplace with the clothes that you are wearing and don't care how you're treated or how you feel, then you can fly for $5. And which is, I think that's
it's good that the option is out there. I could have used it a lot more in college.
Yeah.
You know, and I was like flying to concerts and stuff.
Flying
was cheap in those days.
I need to talk to more people that are doing it the most efficient way possible, because you can't do it with bags.
Yeah.
I think you have to, because don't you get a personal bag?
I think they charge you for that too.
I mean, they can't.
I remember buying a granola bar at the airport and thinking, are they going to charge me for this once I get out of Spirit?
Charge you for bringing?
Yeah, they might.
How much does it cost to bring with me?
I'm thinking, because ladies have such big bags.
Yeah,
there you go. There's your bag.
I did like the sense of humor they had once I got on the plane, though. They said, so and so, if you are caught smoking, you'll be fined so and so. And let's face it, if you all had that kind of money, you'd be flying United.
Exactly. No kidding. So. I fly United. They did a decent job. They actually were very nice at the Philadelphia counter, helping me out with our baggage. And I have I travel with a child who has a disability, and they were cool there. But when we got to the gate, they put us. We missed getting. Well, TSA was very strange. They didn't quite know how to process us through security. And they kept saying, who's going to take care of the stroller? And it's a wheelchair. Yeah. And then they were like, who's going to take care of the baby? And I'm like, my son is 11. Mm. And so it was, and I'm trying not to get frustrated with even just the language, but that does matter. And I told them, for the next family, please don't address an 11-year-old as a baby. Please don't call that a stroller. It's a wheelchair. And that might sound like I'm being picky, but at the same time, I'm trying to get through this too. And you've isolated us from the rest of the group, because you're trying to figure out how to examine the wheelchair. They wanted to test his palms for chemicals as well. And that was a strange moment. And like Declan, with his sensory input as a child with autism, he was pulling his hands away, and I had to hold. It was very strange. Yeah. And I understand, for everyone's safety, but an autistic kid having his hands tested for, and they don't know. First he's a baby, then he's a possible terrorist. Mm. You don't know. Everything can change in the blink of an eye at the airport. But it was, by the way, I do highly recommend TSA PreCheck. Esmeralda, if you're traveling, if you're going to Boston, have you done that yet?
I haven't. I don't really mind. I try to be as efficient as possible. Like, I take my shoes off way early.
Yes.
And yank everything out. And then if they want to put me in that one x-ray where you're all naked, I'm like, whatever. Fine.
Where are you going through security?
The one where you gotta.
Oh, they x-ray your body.
Get that,
You x-ray your body, and it's like people are complaining because you could see everything.
Oh, I don't know.
I'm like, I don't care. Whatever, just do it.
If we could, don't you think that there would be more instances of people putting that online?
Yeah,
I mean, yeah, but I'm like, you know what?
And even if it was, I imagine you get pretty jaded to it after about person six.
Yeah,
you know?
I think so too. Yeah, and then there was also confusion with the TSA agents about whether or not we could take this box of soy milk. And then they were like standing there talking about it, and I was like, we'll just throw it away. We don't have to open this up for conversation. Let's just go ahead and assume that we can't take it with us.
Wait, what was the problem?
One agent thought that you could, because my child had special needs, that they would let us go through. But the other one said that she thought they were going to make us throw it away. So I, wanting to know what the end result would be, I actually went with it. And they wanted to open it and test it.
I'm amazed that no one knows in the TSA. Like, guys, please, be consistent. So, on board everyone.
Yes, the final decision was to open the silk soy milk carton and test a little. They had to pour a little bit out, and then I poured the rest into Declan's sippy cup, and all was saved. Yeah, traveling is dicey for anybody, but when you have special needs, it is. And most of the people on our flight were very cool, and I don't blame the woman in front of us for getting a little frustrated. Declan, I have to find something else for Declan to soothe himself with. He has a music bar because he can't speak and doesn't have and also limited language reception. For him, what really is appealing is music and certain notes. So he has this one music toy that he plays the same key over and over and over again, which is kind of haunting when you're sitting in a plane and you just da 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 da, and it's just over and over again. And then he gets frustrated because he wants to get up, and he flung this little piano bar like over the like his new thing is just like throwing things, and on a on a flight where no one can go anywhere, it's just like, I am so sorry. And for 2 hours you try to stay on top of it, but your head starts to drop because you're sleepy. But yes, so thank you to everyone at United Airlines who was very patient with our family and giving us the room that we needed. And it was cool. It was fun to go to Philadelphia. I highly recommend, and the food was amazing. Such good food.
I got a really cool trip coming up on Friday.
Where are you going?
I'm going to Iowa. I am going to the Iowa State Fair. I'm going to eat all the deep fried things on sticks, and then I'm seeing Kiss from the back row of the grandstand. It will be the most American day of all time.
Wow. I'm sorry, what's the combination of things?
Iowa State Fair, deep fried food on a stick, and Kiss from the back row of the grandstand.
That's fantastic. Yeah. That is a dream come true.
That's one heck of a day.
I'm a little jealous. As a matter of fact, I say we road trip with Adam Selzer because he's living life right.
Yeah, I want to eat fried foods.
Last time I was at the Iowa State Fair, I had the deep fried butter on a stick.
What? How did that go?
It's basically a very buttery cinnamon roll, really. Very, very buttery cinnamon roll.
Oh, boy.
But now these days they're wrapping bacon around everything.
Yeah, that seems like it's a thing. Yeah.
Frankly, I think it's already a little played out.
Oh, just a little bit. This poor pigs. Yeah. More after this on Pretty Late with Patty Vasquez, 720 WGN. You are listening Pretty Late. I'm your host, Patty Vasquez, live in the Allstate Showcase Studio. Joining me is Adam Selzer, who is an author. His latest book, Just Kill Me, is available for pre-order on his website, adamchicago.com. Mm-hmm. He's also he's a tour guide, does some ghost tours around the Chicagoland area. And I thought, who should we call? And I went through I was like, you know who we haven't talked to in a long time? Is ghost hunter Scott Marcus, who we actually did a ghost hunting in this very building, in the Tribune Tower.
Oh, yeah.
So I thought we'd give him a little bit of a last call on Pretty Late with Patty Vasquez. Let's see if we'll probably get his voicemail. I'm hoping. This is that moment where
your call has been forwarded.
Oh, let's make sure we don't put that on the air. Scott Marcus is actually also a filmmaker and a good friend of the show. We haven't had him on in a while because he comes in for a lot of those, the ghost conferences.
Please record your message.
Ooh.
When you have finished recording, you may hang up or press 1 for more options.
Oh, there we go. Hey, Scott Marcus. It's Patty Vasquez on WGN Radio.
And Adam Seltzer.
And Esmeralda Leon.
Craig Collins.
That everybody's here. And we miss you. I know it's been a while since we did a little bit of a ghost hunting. Craig and I, you were skeptical, and it was there were some scary things in the building. Mostly when we were sitting in the dark, I think, is the only time. It was weird.
I don't believe in ghosts. So I know that there were sounds that we heard at times and other things that may have been ghost-esque. But to me, it might have just been wind.
Oh, remember the security guard who was not pleased?
Yeah. He was not pleased with us just wandering through the
Tribune That's somebody you run into in ghost hunts. Yeah. And we don't have access. Not pleased.
We don't have access to all the rooms, so we sort of snuck into some places.
Yes. I
guess there is like a secret passage up in the old editor's office.
Well, yes, that's true. We have been told that there are doors to hit, like, hidden pockets in the wall for, in case of an attack. I believe people wanted to be able to hide in the walls. Yeah. So Scott Marcus is a ghost hunter and a filmmaker, and our very good friend Adam Selzer is a ghost tour guide. So maybe I think that we need to do those things together.
Oh, yeah. Let's mix it up. Scott. Let's go find some secret passages.
Yeah. Oh, so. Yeah, that would be very cool.
Yeah.
Craig, would you be game for trying it again for ghost hunting?
I would be game for doing it as many times as we want. I don't know that I'm going to believe in it.
Right. I don't know. You know, I never
expect Adam doesn't believe in it either.
Or they'll give me the wrong, you know, hear voice go, wait, what was that? And the voice goes, Rachel's like, oh, I'm not Rachel. Never mind.
Do you want to see ghosts, though, Craig? Do you want to see ghosts, or is it not something that you seek?
What do you mean?
Would you want to know, like, proof of an afterlife in the form of a ghost?
So, sure. If someone could prove that a ghost was somewhere, like they said, I just saw this ghost, you will absolutely see it if you go to this place. Yeah, I'd love to go see a ghost and witness one.
In sort of an attraction sort of way. Esmeralda, because I've always wanted to see a ghost, and I think that's part of why I'll never see a ghost.
Oh, I for sure want to see a ghost, although not the angry ones.
No.
I want a happy one.
No, the angry ghosts that, like, move things.
The ones that want you out of wherever you are.
Get out.
Oh, yeah. They always get that on the TV shows, the voice going, get out.
Get out.
That's never happened to me, but I can't wait till it does. Like, you get out. You're the one dead, man.
You go ahead and try to make me. There's Adam standing in the store.
You get out.
No, you get out.
I wouldn't want to tell a ghost to make me get out.
Yeah.
Because goodness knows what they could do.
True.
Yeah. You don't want to push their luck. I watched the new Poltergeist, which was terrible.
Really?
Did you watch that one?
I didn't see it.
Anybody see that one? Esmeralda? Craig? Nobody saw it? It was so bad. It was really, really hard to. I love a good horror movie, but I haven't seen. I've heard there's some good ones.
They're filming, by the way,
what?
Exorcist here in Chicago?
It's a series, though, isn't it? Yes.
Yeah, they're actually filming tomorrow in my neighborhood.
Are they
Albany
really?
Park, yeah.
That makes sense. Your neighborhood's kind of creepy.
Thanks.
Just kidding. Has all the earmarks of,
Your neighborhood gives me the creams.
I could see a demonic possession.
There's the Bohemian Cemetery over there.
That's true.
Oh, yeah.
I'm sure there's some ghosts roaming around.
We went and saw the gravesite of Benjamin Franklin this weekend, the way. That was. Why do people put pennies on gravesites? Because there were pennies on.
There's lots of different traditions going through it, but who knows what's going through anybody's given head when they put a penny on a gravesite.
And these kids come running into the cemetery, and they run onto, because Benjamin Franklin and his wife, and I believe his kid and in-law, child-in-law, I don't know, I couldn't read it because it was a little faded, but they ran on top of it because it looks like a book cover. Like two huge slats of marble, right? Slabs of marble. And they come and they run on top of it. I'm like, my voice wouldn't come out to be like, I don't think you should be on that.
Right.
And of course, the folks that run the cemetery that take care of, like, you know, that watch over the whole thing, they came over. And the guy was very patient because, you know, he's got to do this every day.
Yeah.
Okay, we got some rules. There's no running. There's definitely no walking on top of the...
You have reached the maximum time permitted for recording your message.
Scott's got a very short... bye, Scott. Mm-hmm.
Does he remember, or does the guy remind them there's dead people under their feet?
Yeah, and what was surprising to me is, like, the parents didn't say anything. They just, like, stood there while the kids were admonished by another adult.
Typical parents.
You know what I always run into with, like, a president assumes and stuff? It's obnoxious old people.
Oh.
You know, I mean, especially you get, like, James Garfield's tomb or something. It's mostly retirees who are going to have the leisure to go to James Garfield's tomb, I guess. But I mean, even like at Abraham Lincoln's tomb, you know, I mean, they're just like, say cheese.
Oh, I know.
And it's not, you know, pretending to pick the statue's nose and stuff. Like
that poor Abe Lincoln's nose is so worn.
Yeah.
You got to rub his nose for good luck. Vic Vaughn, have you ever rubbed Abe Lincoln's nose for good luck? You got to rub his nose.
I've been there, but I never got up that high to rub it.
It's pretty low. There's one right in front of the tomb.
Yeah, I did an interview with the people who run the tomb a couple of years ago. They said, it's like, why are they all rubbing? And then I was like, we don't like it much, but they put it in the commercial, so we kind of have to let them know.
Jeez. Yeah, I'm drawn to cemeteries for some reason. I probably will be that person who's retired and going to the tomb of James Garfield.
Yeah.
Am I the only one that likes going to cemeteries? I love going to cemeteries.
No, I love it. I was just telling... Colin, my boyfriend, that we should go tomorrow.
Do you want to go to, are you going to Rosehill? Where do you want to go?
I think we're going to go to the Bohemian since it's so close and
that's
very
pretty.
It is
right.
I'll be running some Graceland tours in October. Some Graceland and Rosehill tours, actually.
I like Rosehill.
Yeah, I love Rosehill. I love Graceland. I love Rosehill. There's all kinds of great stuff at both of them.
Alphonse's on Milwaukee Avenue is pretty cool, too. How about you, Vic Vaughn? Do you have a favorite cemetery?
No, not really.
Craig, no favorite cemeteries? No? You don't have any on your list? All right. There's some cool ones. Well, New York obviously has a lot of great
ones. Right. They have much older ones than we do.
Adam Selzer, thank you so much for coming and joining us. We look forward to having you back.
Always a pleasure, buddy.
Yay. Go to adamchicago.com to pre-order his book, Just Kill Me, and find out more about his tours.